Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture, the Budget Division for Thursday, April 16th, 2015, will come to order. Members, we had to put the bill out yesterday, and there were a few additions, changes, and corrections that we came up with on an A09 CDF amendment that staff will pass out. And what it'll do here is put the bill in compliance with what the spreadsheet is saying right now. So we'll hand out the amendment, and then Ms. Doyle Fontaine can explain it, and then we'll put it on the bill, and then I'll have Mr. Mueller go through the spreadsheet so everybody can understand the numbers. So, Carlin?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, we're looking at the A009 amendment. On page one, the first paragraph Q would, this is the language in the appropriation section that would add the Getting to Work program that Senator Saxhog presented, I believe it was yesterday, and that'll be reflected on the spreadsheet. Then the next few paragraphs, D through F on page one, these amounts are for additional wage compliance and enforcement and reporting for the Department of Labor and Industry, some activities for them to conduct. On page two, paragraph B, starting on line 2.3, this would allow some money from the auto theft prevention account to go toward the Department of Commerce to go toward investigation of insurance company motor vehicle claims steering activities. And also on page two, the next lines 2.9 to 2.12 are some technical corrections to Senator Stump's workforce housing grants sections that are in the bill. Starting on page two, line 2.13, section 29, this will insert the language for the Getting to Work grant program. Again, that ties back to the Senator Saxhog bill we heard yesterday. Going over to page four, starting on line 4.9, this language, section 4, this relates back to the money from the auto theft prevention account. This would require, or this adds some language regarding anti-steering and investigations by Commerce regarding insurance activities or anti-steering. The bottom of page 4, is a new section 8 at line 4.34, this expands there's energy project, expands the purpose and uses of an innovative energy project. And this is also be in the Commerce article. On page 5, we, on line 5.16 to the end of the page, there is some language in there for the PERB, and actually this is more updated language. The language that was included was in the as-introduced bill. This is a Senator Pappas bill. And this is regarding open meetings and some reporting for the PERB, but this is just more updated language to be included in the bill.
So Senator Scoey will move the A0009 amendment. Does anybody want to discuss it? It's already reflected in the spreadsheet, and so if we just put it on, we can just go right to the spreadsheet, if that's okay with everybody. Okay? Okay. On the A009 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Mr. Mueller, why don't you take us through the spreadsheet and let everybody understand what's in the bill. I think I had some questions about what last year's forecast was on there, and I think you've got that on there on the first page. So
it seems pretty straightforward.
We'll go through it right now, and when we get done, we'll try and pass the bill. So go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, the first page of the spreadsheet, is this a summary of the general fund changes that by agency? So it's just agency totals by general fund across the whole bill. Later on, the spreadsheet is divided basically into two parts. One is the ag and environment, and we have a second spreadsheet for the economic development. What I want to point out on this first page is our target. If you find the Senate, the first Senate columns, and then the Senate minus forecast, the gray column right next to that, and you go all the way down to the bottom, this division was given a target of 56 $6.5 million net. We accomplished that by spending $109.5 million, and then we get back $53 million in different revenues. Some of those, a big part of that is a transfer from the closed landfill fund. Some of it what we pay back in the tails. Our tails target was $62.5 million above the base. And so that, between the two targets and using one-time money from the closed landfill, a lot of the spending in this bill, general fund spending in this bill, is one-time. So that's just a quick summary of the general fund. The pages after this will go agency by agency through the change items. The next page is labeled on the bottom, it's Ag Environment 1, and then the pages go through there. This part of the spreadsheet for the Ag and Environment articles are just list the change items by the agency. I actually have a more detailed spreadsheet that goes through each division of the departments, and that one is probably about 30 pages long. So this one just shows the change items and then agency totals. So the first page here is Department of Ag, and you'll also notice the first column shows the current spending in year 14 and 15. That's the year we're in right now, at least agency totals. Then we got Gov's budget. We got two sets of columns for that. So I'll be working off, if you look at the Senate column, the first Senate column, and then the Senate minus forecast will show where we're, and Senate minus Gov, where we're different than the Gov. The first lines are what the base forecast for the Department of Ag is. They're at $165 million, their base budget. And then following that are change items. The first set are general fund change items. A lot of these were in the governor's bill. The Senate is $250,000 above the governor for wolf depredation account. Mr. Knopf pointed out on the language yesterday that we front-loaded a little bit more money into that so that they could pay off some of their backlog of claims. Yeah. And we have more money in the tails on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, before we get too far, so Mr. Mueller, going with the agricultural line there across, you've got an 83,761. Moving to the right, the proposed appropriation is in which column now for this year? Is it the Senate second? Which one is it?
Center,
so we can follow them straight down all the way.
The way it works is those top four lines are what the base, what's in the base. And then, so if you look at Senate, it's basically the base amount plus all these change items, and then the new totals are at the bottom.
So 106,707. Is that the right column?
No, where are you seeing that?
The total, like in the Department of Ag, if you look down at the line 60, the agency total.
Wait a minute, I don't know that we've got.
Look under Senate where it says FY 2016-2017.
Right.
Page 2,
FY,
line 60.
And 2016-2017.
Four on the page. Yeah. Okay, there we go. 60.
Page 2, line 60.
I'm sorry.
Well, page 1 of the Ag and Environment.
Okay, he's on the right page now.
Yeah. So.
I'm on the right page now.
Okay. Right.
I don't worry about columns. I got to get on the right page before I get on.
All right. So hopefully you're on the right page all day here.
I hope so. It's going to be a long day.
Feel free, and members, feel free to ask questions while we're going through this. I'll be happy to explain something. So the first set of change items on line 14 through 32 are all change items to the general fund. I've got them organized by fund here. So on line 14 is the additional money for wolf depredation. And like I said, the Senate was $250,000 above the governor on that. The next items on 15 through 18 were all increases recommended by the governor. And the Senate is carrying the same amount. On line 19 and 20, the governor proposed a number of changes both in fee increases and also moving some of these fees out of the general fund into the ag fund. What the Senate is doing here is keeping all the expenditures for dairy lab and food inspections in the general fund. We're not increasing any fees, so we're just we're adding more money to cover the cost of the fees. So based all the governor's fee increases in the ag bill, we've covered with general fund. The governor also on line 21 has a compensation increase of 1.8% that we'll see across most of the agencies throughout different funds. So on line 22 and 23 is where the Senate is covering the cost of the new dairy fees and food inspection fees and all the other fees. I've broken them up into sort of two categories. Line 22 is covering the cost of the dairy and food fees. That's a total of $6.8 million for the biennium. And covering the cost of the other fees, some of the smaller ones in the bill, is $1.33 million for the biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
Do you, Mr. Mueller, know what the percentage increase is for that particular section there? Do you know that or not?
Approximately. I can figure that out as we go along, or later on, maybe I can come back and I have my other spreadsheet
Thank
here.
You.
I can. Mr. Chairman, there's starting on line 24 are some Senate only items. There's the noxious weed grants from Senator Sparks, the marketing Cuba, also from Senator Sparks, food distribution hubs at $350,000, the urban ag grants from Senator Kerr, $500,000. The other big item in the Department of Ag from the general fund is down on line 32 is the Senator Sparks bill for the ag education and extension. So that's $8 million per year. So to fit that in and all the other ag increases in general fund, we've reduced the agri appropriation, which is about $9.5 million per year, by $3 million. So that's on line 28. And that would be a permanent reduction. Into the tails. The farm to food and shelf is a $500,000 increase. The livestock industry study, $25,000. And the STEAM 4-H youth from Senator Dietzick at $300,000. That $8 million per year for the ag education extension, it's $8 million per year in the current biennium, and in the tails, because we had a smaller tails target, it's the $3.5 million per year. So the overall increase for Department of Ag General Fund is $23.99 million for the biennium and 14.6 in the tails.
Mr. Chair, before we get out of this section, one quick question. AURI never came to our committee, so they're not in here.
Chairman and Senator Ingvitz, AURI has their own separate appropriation next page.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with regard to line 32, I mean, some of that is in the language in the bill specifically says it's for staff. So if you go to conference committee, it'd be nice if you kind of balance that out between this year and the next year. So if they do hire some hires or they're hiring personnel, there would be some security with regard to that research project.
I'll take it. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding line 21, the 1.8% adjustment, aren't the wages automatically covered by contract and they'll have their adjustments that they have coming anyway? So is this in addition to the contract adjustments that will be made?
Mr. Chairman, no. This pays for the contract adjustment that they all receive so that they're able to have extra money to keep the same people on staff. So okay. This is not authorized an additional 1.8 increase. This pays for the increase that they already received in the contract.
In the contract?
Yeah, this was applied across all agencies by the governor.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, starting on line 36 are the change items that the governor had identified through fee increases to the ag fund. And the Senate did not take any of these because we paid for them out of the general fund. Um, The one thing I will point out on here is line 49 is the, there is a fee that we are, that the Department of Ag will be collecting from the Industrial Hemp Center Eakin bill. And that there's a fee that we track later on, and this would be the expenditures on line 49, of 643 and 456. Per year or each year, and then it's a little bit smaller on the tails. The last category are some other funds where there are some changes. The Department of Ag is able to bring in a little bit more in federal money for meat inspectors by appropriating some extra general fund money to that. It's matching money, so that's $250 per year. We paid for the corporate farm filing fee with general fund, and then the cottage food bill from Senator Dibble will spend about $50,000 per year in collection of fees. So all, when you add up all the increases to the Department of Ag and the decreases to Agri, it's a $25.685 million per, for the biennium. On the next page, page 2, is a detail of the revenue changes. These are mostly listed, the fee increases that were in the governor's bill, and it also shows the two fees that are in the Senate bill, the cottage food bill, $50,000 per year, and then industrial hemp, $650 and $450, raising in fees. And that, those are the only fees on the Senate side. The next agency is the Board of Animal Health. And the only change item in this one is on line 99. That's the 1.8 compensation adjustment that was in the governor's, same as the governor's proposal. So that's $167,000. There's later on a separate appropriation from the for the avian flu. I've actually put that in a whole separate category starting on line 105, mostly because that's actually a fiscal year, can be spent in fiscal year 15. So we put it in a separate category here. And Department of Ag was requested $514,000 and Board of Animal Health $379,000 for a total of $893,000. And then the last one here is the Ag Utilization Research Institute. And they have a direct appropriation of $3.6 million per year. There is no increase or decrease to the Ag, to the AURI.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mueller, there was a increase in AURI a year or two ago. Is this number reflective of this or?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what number is that?
AURI.
Yeah, I know what number.
It's on line
112.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, I'll double check, but I believe this amount that's shown on the spreadsheet reflects both the statutory amount and the direct amount.
Okay, thank you.
So then that's it for the ag article. We got a general fund summary again there. There's about a net of line 132 of about just over $25 million of general fund money. Was added to the ag article, and there's no other revenue changes on the general fund side. Next, on line 140, we jump to Article 3, which is the Environment and Natural Resources article. Again, here we start with the PCA. The first lines up on top are what the base is in the February forecast. We start with the general fund change items on line 151. We have the compensation adjustment, the 1.8 million on line 152. The governor had a request for $1 million extra for the EQB of general fund money. They front loaded that with a $750,000 request. The Senate only did 250, but paid for the extra $500,000 down on line 165 with environmental fund. The governor had a proposal for the Toxic Free Kids Act, which would have required some general fund money up front. In the Senate, it's not in the Senate proposal. There's two new Senate items. Line 155 is a $250,000 appropriation from the general fund for review of water rules. And then another one for the Red River Basin Water Plan for $200,000. So total general fund increases over the base is a little over $1 million on line 158. But a little over half of that was ongoing at 628. Next are changes from the environmental fund. The first is a compensation adjustment that results in a little over $2.5 million per year. The PCA is largely funded out of the environmental fund. If you actually look up on line 144 at their base appropriation, you'll see almost half the agency is funded by the environmental fund. The air program increase was in the governor's proposal. That happens automatically when the feds increase their program. Line 163, the governor had a proposal for an additional $900,000 per year for data service improvements. The Senate is recommending half of that. Two new things on line 164 and 165. The 165 already talked about. That was using environmental fund to fund something the governor had in the general fund. 164 is $150,000 for implementing the wild rice standards that are in the language in the bill. Out of the remediation fund on line 170, the first item is some additional money for Superfund administration, $600,000 per year. The governor was recommending moving some money between the closed landfill administration and underground storage tank inspection, $250,000 per year. That's just the movement of money between two items. Underground storage tank inspection. These are all items that were in the governor's bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a quick question regarding the closed landfill fund, and the reason I do is that last year I was on a conference committee, and I think at that time Senator Schmidt actually made a request to have one of his landfills in his districts added to the fund, and not really knowing of the fund, but not necessarily of its funding, I asked a question concerning the status of that fund, and there was a lot of very nervous adjustment of seats around that table at that point. Could you give us just a quick update as to the status of that account, and has the state sometimes dipped into it for funds that maybe are not associated with the closing of landfills?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman and members,
I'm starting to get the same sense of seat shifting that I did last year. So.
Senator Weber, yes, the closed landfill fund has been tapped in the past to cover some deficits. The language that was put in back in 2010 required that when we repaid back the fund, that it would be paid back with lost interest and lots of dividend earnings that potentially happen. So we took $48 million out of that fund. And already over $61 million has been paid back, with another 30-some million that is due back to it. So a lot more is due back to the fund than was taken out. What we're doing here in the Senate, this proposal, is we're drawing that fund down to $28 million and then repaying it back another $20 million in the tail. So it'll end up with the $48 million that we originally took out, but we're just capturing some of that interest that was deposited back into that account. And this fund wasn't supposed to be used until 2021, actually. Okay. And so that's sort of the status of that fund. So it's not being used for any of the current closed landfill operations. That's all being covered out of current spending, general fund and remediation fund, and a little bit of bonding is actually paying for all the closed landfills that we have right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, finishing up the remediation fund changes, the one Senate item is on line 176. It's an $868,000 appropriation from the remediation fund for a wastewater cleanup site. And there's language in that was language in the bill. On the page 4, we'll see the totals for PCA. There's about a little over $9 million in new spending in PCA on line 186, you'll see. It's a little bit less than the governor, and about a little over a million of that is general fund. Under revenue changes, you'll see on line 190 is the one-time transfer of $33.2 million out of the closed landfill fund. That's the transfer that'll take the current balance down to $28 million. And then later on, we're capturing the future, we're repealing the future payments that would go into that fund also. So that brings a general fund savings. The only other change here is the governor recommended a switch in funding sources from the petroleum. It's just a transfer from the petroleum tank cleanup fund to the remediation fund. So that is it for PCA. On to DNR, starting on line 200, are all the base appropriation levels for the DNR. Their base appropriation is about $709 million from various funds. The general fund is like $170 million of that. So you'll see DNR's portion of the general fund portion of DNR is also pretty small, sort of like it was with PCA. The change items for the DNR general fund start on line 209. The first one is a compensation adjustment, the $1.8 million. On line 2010, the Senate is proposing an additional $1 million a year on top of what the governor was proposing for forest management. The governor is proposing $2 million per year. The Senate is proposing $3 million per year. The Forest Resource Council, the governor was recommending $200,000 per year increase. The Senate is recommending $300,000. That's above the governor. Line 212, the governor was recommending a general fund increase to parks and trails of $3.6 million. The Senate is also doing the same. Line 2013, the DNR has spreads their retirement costs and enforcement costs and things like that over a number of funds. This is an issue that came up in a deficiency bill early in the session where the DNR had a request to help cover some of their early retirement costs. And some of those costs are continuing through the agency. So they had a proposal to help out with some of those costs. We're above the governor here on line 2013 in the general fund by $174,000. Most of it because we didn't use the natural resources fund to fund this like the governor did. The governor was relying on a gas tax to happen and to put a lot of extra money in some of the trail accounts. And some of those funds would help with some of the enforcement costs for DNR. Since we can't rely on the gas tax in this bill right now, we're not using any of the increases that the governor had that were tied to the gas tax. Line 2014, the governor had some one-time general fund money for replacing their aviation fleet. And there's also some game and fish money that's going into this. This is not the planes used for firefighting. This is enforcement and planes. Line 215, improved electronic services. The governor had $500,000 per year. The Senate is at half that in one time. And then legal costs for water management, the governor requested $500,000 for the biennium of one time, and the Senate is also recommending that. Some Senate-only lines. Line 217, I'm showing as an appropriation now. This is for Senator Scoia's utility crossing. There's going to be some money that the DNR has to refund based on some people that paid. The bill has the fee changes being retroactive. So they'll owe some money back. I'm just showing that here as on the appropriation side right now. About $10,000 of general fund that will be refunded. There's some money happening in other funds too, but for now I'm just showing the general fund costs. And there's some change in revenue later on too. An increase in the Mississippi Headwaters Board from Senator Saxhog bill of $21,000 per year. Ring levy grants from Senator Eakin, $400,000. Wiper Lake study for the Senator Wieger bill, $150,000. The Forest Road pilots, the Senator Saxhog bill, it's a one-time money, $1.255 million. And then the Senator Schmidt Bluffland Trail signage, it's $50,000. So for the DNR, though, it's about $20.8 million per year general fund increase. And like I said, some of that is just one time. It's $16.2 million in the tails. Natural resources fund changes. A lot of the governor's items were tied to the gas tax increase. If you look at the governor's columns, and most of the Senate columns are blank, it's because we are not doing the ones tied to the gas tax. We did do the compensation increase. Lines 228 and line 243 down below that are actually sort of tied together. The non-game wildlife account, sort of the chickadee checkoff, is in decline. The revenues coming into that are down. So they're showing a decrease in spending coming from that, but they're making up for some of that out of the heritage enhancement account on line 243, with a $750,000 increase. That money is from the lottery. The other item that the Senate is carrying, the one significant fee change in the bill, is the governor's proposal to increase parks fees. And so this is the appropriation that will come out of the account that fee increase goes into. And this was in the governor's bill. So it's $1 million the first year and $1.3 million the second, ongoing. The rest of the items there in the governor's side were tied to the gas tax increases. So the last three items are Senate-only items, line 235. These are from language that's already in the bill. City of Virginia Trail Bridge Crossing, $190,000. East Grand Forks Red River Rec Area, this is to help pay for a revenue sharing agreement between the state and the East Grand Forks. And Shell Rock River, $65,000. So Natural Resources Fund increase, it's $3.4 million.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the Parks and Trails money on 230, are the fees staying in the Parks and Trails division, or do they go to the general fund, or where do they go?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dietzick, they stay in its own account. So all the Parks and Trails fees has its own account and gets appropriated by the legislature.
Okay, thank you.
Following that are changes to the Game and Fish Fund. The governor had some pretty big increases out of Game and Fish Fund. This is due to the increase in the hunting and fishing licenses that we were passed a couple years ago, and also due to the increase in federal money that we're getting due to the increased sales of guns and ammunition. So there's and by spending some more of the actual state dollars, we actually bring in more federal money. So the DNR had a proposal to kind of front load some spending out of the Game and Fish Fund, which would allow them to draw some extra federal money. The first one is the compensation adjustment tied to the 1.8%. The next one I already talked about, line 243, is out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. That sort of makes up for the loss from the chickadee checkoff. Line 244 is the governor's level. It's a little over $5 million per year in 16 and 17, but you'll see that amount goes down to about $1.8 million in the tails. So they're front-loading some game and fish spending for some improvements to help draw down some extra federal money. Line 245 is from the Senator Schmidt bill. We're doing $5 million for the shooting sports. So we're doing it all in 1 year, front-loading it. The governor had $500,000 per year ongoing. So this would make it, so the Senate is doing what Senator Schmidt bill did, is putting it all out there the first year. And then the other language changes that we had in Senator Schmidt's bill is also in the bill. 246 is the game and fish portion of the retirement plan contribution. DNR was also requesting an increase for their enforcement division to help. They, I think, are lower right now on the number of enforcement officers that they've had, and they haven't hired any new ones as ones have been retiring. And this would help fund also the academy. And then the line 248 is the game and fish portion of funding the aviation fleet. That's $1.5 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mueller, Chickadee Checkoff. I thought that was a voluntary checkoff box on our tax returns. Why would we be doing general fund money to cover those costs? That's supposed to be whatever is collected.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, yes, that's the non-game wildlife fund. The amounts going into that account have been going down over the years. And what the DNR is proposing, not using general fund, on line 243 is actually using heritage enhancement account money to kind of backfill that and also do some other rare resources preservation. And the heritage enhancement account is actually one of the accounts that is from the lottery in lieu. So that money isn't really general fund money. It's money from the lottery.
Mr. Chair, I would be cautious about doing ongoing expenditures with those temporary funding sources.
Mr. Chairman, on to the next page, our last couple change items that are from other funds. The Conservation Easement Fund that was established in the bill, that was the governor's proposal. This spends that's about $50,000 per year. And then I'm showing the McQuaid Harbor reimbursement just here on the spreadsheet as a special revenue expenditure. This was from Senator Bockville. We're allowing them to spend the federal reimbursement that is sitting in a special revenue account right now. So the total new spending for the department DNR for the biennium is on line 258, $51.2 million for the biennium. And then you see in the tails, it's about $35 million. So about 17 of that was one time. There are a few revenue changes in here. I made sure I got the general fund one changes in here for the utility crossing. There's also a timber permit change that lost a little bit of general fund revenue. I might not be tracking all. There's some other little minor miscellaneous revenue changes that happened because of the utility crossing fee. They're all pretty minor, and I didn't get a chance to get all those on here, though, but they're pretty minor, less than a couple $1,000 changes. The governor had a proposal to increase the watercraft surcharge for the AIS account. That is not in this bill. You'll see the increased park fee revenue side of it on line 265. You'll see the additional federal money on line 266 that the DNR intends to draw down due to their increased spending for the Game and Fish Fund. So that's about an extra $7 million for the biennium. And then conservation easement. And I also wanted to show on line 272 is the amount of money that the governor was booking and the DNR was booking due to the gas tax and the governor's overall proposal that would come into various DNR accounts. So that's shown on line 272. So you can see why under the governor's proposal, they were able to do a lot more spending from different natural resources accounts because they were booking about $20 million of extra revenue coming into those accounts that the Senate is not showing. So that is it for DNR. Met Council Parks, originally the governor had a reduction due for the Minneapolis Park Board, but the supplemental budget restored that, so there's no change both in the governor's budget or the Senate proposal for Metro Parks. Also for Conservation Corps, no change. So it's all base funding. For Board of Water and Soil Resources, there's three change items on starting on line 310, the compensation adjustment, which was in the governor's bill, the Wetland Conservation Act implementation, which was part of the governor's supplemental budget, and then the work one-time appropriation from Senator Saxhog's biofuels bill of $750,000 for some working lands initiatives. So General Bowser is getting a $1.8 million increase for the biennium. On to the next page. We've got it's kind of rolled up here into the totals, but the Minnesota Zoo. We're basically on lines 329. The Senate is recommending the same increase that the governor had of $2.825 million per year for the Minnesota Zoo. So that's $5.6 million for the biennium. of general fund. And on line 335 is the Science Museum is on our spreadsheet, and so we will make sure they are also in the bill. They were inadvertently left off the bill language. So that they're in the spreadsheet, and when it comes around to assuming that stays in the spreadsheet, the appropriation will be in the bill. And here is the base amount. There's no change to their funding, so it's a little over $1 million per year from the general fund. Lines 347 shows the closed landfill amounts. Basically, you can see how under current law, how the closed landfill money would be coming in. Right now, there's $61 million sitting in the closed landfill account. Like I said, we took out 48. So 61 has already been paid back. There's due to be paid back another $29 million in between 16 and 17, and then another $14 million in fiscal year 18. So what the Senate does is, like I said, we draw down $33 million. We eliminate the current payment law. That's in the repeal or in the bill. And then we'll have a provision in the bill that pays back $10 million per year in 18 and 19, restoring that fund back up to $48 million by the time it's stated to be used, starting in fiscal year 2020 or 2021.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingraham.
What line do you see the $48 million difference here in the landfill transfer?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingraham, it's sort of when you add up and subtract some of these numbers. Basically, like I said, there's $61 million in it right now. Back on a different line, we draw down, you'll see it actually down on the line 379 is how we draw down that to $28 million. We eliminate the future payments, then we create a new payment system that pays back $10 million per year. So at the end of the day, $48 million will be left in that account by the end of fiscal 2019, which was the 48 that was originally took out. We just didn't basically captured all the interest back to the general fund.
Thank you.
On line 348, that's just the base funding for an open appropriation for a mining regulatory account. This was something that was in a tax bill a few years later, and it's money that goes back to the DNR for mining regulatory. And I just want to make sure that was here to add to our general fund totals. So that's it for the environment and natural resources changes. You can see the total general fund spending by agency starting on line 358 and how much change that is. And the revenue totals start on line 379. Most of the revenues of the general fund is to that one-time drawdown of the closed landfill. Remediation fund was just a move from one fund to another. Special revenue fund was easements. The natural resources fund, the one increase there, that was due to the parks and trails increase. So the next page on the bottom is where we start our economic development spreadsheet. This one looks a little bit different. And the numbering starts again at 1. I basically have two different spreadsheets. In this one, the structure is a little bit different. This shows each line item and each rider in the bill and the new amounts then for those riders. The first agency is Department of Economic Development, and this does break it down by division of the agency. So starting on line... second line one is business and community development. So you'll see all the line items that appear, all the riders that appear in the bill on line 5 through 17. And if you look at the Senate columns, you'll see what the Senate is recommending for those line items. And the next column over, the one that just says Senate minus, is the amount over the base. And then Senate minus Gov is the amount over the Senate is recommending over the governor. I'll show where the change items are. Under Minnesota Investment Fund, the Senate is moving $850,000. We're kind of front-loading the investment fund. And if you look down on line 27, 28, 29, and 30, we're naming three specific projects under the Minnesota Investment Fund. And in the language that's currently out there, two of these were under Minnesota Investment Fund. Two of them we had in the wrong part of the bill under the host community program. But what the spreadsheet is showing and what we'll do technically is move those last two items, the Tower Harbor and the Duluth Runway, under the MIF program. And those amounts shown in brackets is how much is being recommended for that on line 27 through 30. Jumping back up to Job Creation Fund on line 6, we're under the current year, we're recommending the base funding of 12.5 per year, but I want to point out in the tails to meet our tails target. In both the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund, we're dropping those amounts in the tails. Both these programs have carryover authority for both their current funding and the funding for 16 and 17, so all this money that they still have in the current biennium will be able to carry forward, and the ones that's proposed in 16 and 17 will be able to carry forward. The Business Development Competitive Grant on line 8, the Senate is recommending a $3 million a year increase, so that's 6 for the biennium. Also, the Minnesota Film and TV Board Job Production Fund, the Senate is recommending a $5 million per year one-time increase, so it's $10 million total over the base. The base for that, you see, is $1.5 million. Workforce Housing Grants, a Senator Stumpf bill, would be $2 million per year, and we'll also continue the funding for the pilot project on line 14. So the $4 million for the biennium is new money, and that would be ongoing. We have $500,000 per year for the Small Business Development Centers, for Senator Sharon, and then one-time money for Senator Metzen bill for a city of the second class, $600,000. So those are all general fund changes in business and community development. Under Workforce Development Fund, there are no changes. And lines 25 through 36 is the way this spreadsheet works. It just details what those change items were. Above is basically how that works when they get rolled into the base funding. And the line 38 was from a governor's proposal. They're already collecting some of this money for the Greater Minnesota Job Expansion. It's a small fee that they collect out there, and the governor had a proposal that actually set it up and put it into a fund and allows them to spend it. So that's at $210,000 per year. So the total new general fund spending under business and community development is $22.4 million. Under workforce development, there are a number of changes in here. This is where both we increased some funding to some of the competitive grant programs, and then also funded a few individual ones. The Adult Workforce Grant Program gets two sources of funding. So on line 52 is the general fund amount. The Senate is recommending the base amount. The governor actually had a proposal that merged a couple of these competitive grant programs into one. The Senate is keeping the programs separate. So you see on line 52 is the base amount for the general fund portion of the adult program. On line 67 is the workforce development amount. And that amount has been increased by $4 million per year. So the Adult Workforce Competitive Grant Program will be getting a $4 million increase per year. Most that coming from the Workforce Development Fund. The next change item is line 55. This is back to the general fund. Career Counseling Coordinators. This is Senator Saxhog bill. $500,000 per year ongoing. Next one is also a bill from yesterday that we adopted the amendment today, the Getting to Work Grants. Senator Saxhawk bill, it's $500,000 one time. The next one is the Senator Herr bill, 1198, Eastside Enterprise Center, and that is $500,000. Another bill from Senator Cohen that was just introduced to the Ujamaa Place internships at $150,000. The Pathways to Preservation Trades, the Senator Coonan bill at $500,000. One-time grant to the Occupational Development Corp, $250 per year one time. And then line 61 is the YWCA St. Paul from Senator Pappas bill at $400,000. And then we have $150,000 for the paid family leave report that was already in the language. So those are the general fund changes on the in the general fund riders. Under the Workforce Development Fund, I already pointed out the $4 million per year increase for the competitive grants for the adult workforce. The Minnesota Youth Program will receive a $1 million increase per year. Those are the youth competitive grant program. Youth Build is at the same level. Minnesota Diversified Industries, this was in the base, and they also requested some additional amount of $250,000 addition per year. The Youth Workforce Competitive Grant Program, that's held at same level funding. The Fast Track Adult Career Program, the Senate, that's a... that's where the governor had recommended rolling that into a different program. The Senate is keeping that as a separate program. Under the OICs, the Senate has the Senator Champion bill as a sort of a subset of that, Senate File 1917, and that is funded at $1 million per year for the Workforce Development Fund. The Big Brothers and Big Sisters proposal on line 76 received an increase of $125,000 per year in the Workforce Development Fund. And then the next page, again, just specifies on line 83 through 101. Those are the specific change items. What I just went through before is how they're rolled into the base. Some of those change items were for programs that are already in the base. So the workforce development total, new spending is on line 106, about $16.4 million per year, most of that coming from the Workforce Development Fund of $12.7 per year. Under general support services, there's only a couple change items. These were all in the governor's proposal. They're basically the compensation adjustments that come out of the general fund and workforce development fund. And also the proposal to fund the increase in the Olmsted Implementation Office at Deed. That's an increase of, you'll see the base amount on line 114. The governor, they're at about $500,000. The governor recommended a $425,000 per year increase to that office. That goes down a little bit in the tails. That's it for general support services. Under Minnesota Trade Office, there are no changes to any of the funding programs in there. Under vocational rehabilitation, starting on line 147, we have no change to the general fund portion of their overall spending program. Centers for Independent Living, the governor recommended some increased funding from them for the general fund of almost $1.4 million for the biennium. Extended employment for persons with severe disabilities, there's no change to the general fund portion of that, but there's an increase from the Workforce Development Fund below. Extended employment support services for persons with mental illness, the Senate is picking up the governor's recommendation for $1 million per year increase for that. The next are some Senate-only items. Assistive Technology Grant Program from Senate File 394 from Senator Tomasoni. Olmsted Training Grants, Senate File 1155, Senator Hoffman of $750,000. And again, both language for those two items is already in the bill. Next page, economic development, page 3. You'll see these are workforce development fund appropriations. Line 159 is an increase over the set over of 1.5 million above the base for extended employment for persons with disabilities. This is over the governor had recommended $250,000 per year increase. The Senate is going with $750,000. It's from the Workforce Development Fund. And Senator, line 160 is a proposal from Senator Schmidt to provide funding for an existing grant program that was put in statute but never received any money yet. Employment service for deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. That would be $600,000 per year from the Workforce Development Fund. Again, below that just specifies the change items individually. So under Volk Rehab, the overall increase for the biennium is $7.8 million. A little over $5 million of that is general fund. The rest is from the Workforce Development Fund. Services, the next division of deed, services for the blind, is just base funding, $5.9 million per year from the general fund. Under broadband, the Senate is recommending $17 million for broadband. The governor was at $30 million. The current year spending was $20 million that we put into the bill last year. So the Senate's at $17 million for broadband. So that wraps up deed. You'll see the increased general fund spending for deed on line 203 is just short of $50 million for the biennium. An increased workforce development fund is about $15.4 million. Also in the language and shown on later on in the spreadsheet, we cancel $6 million of workforce development money that was reallocated by the Job Skills Partnership Board in their last March meeting. Basically, current statutes allows them to reallocate surpluses out of that fund, and they reallocated $12 million, and the Senate proposal is capturing back $6 million of that. It's not putting it into the general fund or anything. It's just canceling back to the Workforce Development Fund. So basically, some of that is being respent in this bill. That's about it for deed. On the Housing Finance Agency, most of these changes were either in the governor's bill or from Senator Dibble bill. There's some one-time funding increases over and above the governor. The governor had a, or the Senate is recommending an increase to the Housing Challenge Program of $500,000 per year. The governor had a one-time proposal for a housing job growth initiative of $10 million, and the Senate is doing $8 million. But remember, indeed, we also had that other housing workforce program under that, the Senator Stump bill. So overall, the Senate has a little bit more funding than the governor for workforce housing. And that is it for the redevelopment part of housing finance. Under the homelessness division, the governor had a, the Senate is proposing some additional spending for the Bridges program, $2.5 million. The Housing Trust Fund, about $2.3 million. And the Family Homeless Prevention Program, $1.5 million. And that's above the governor. The governor had a proposal to reallocate some of their base funding for some smaller programs that are to reallocate some of that money to existing programs or to an existing capacity grant program. The Senate's picking up that recommendation. So those changes are shown on line 248 through 250. Under Home Ownership Assistance Fund, there's no change there. Under preservation, single-family housing, the Senator Dibble bill had a little bit of extra money for that, $250 per year. That's on line 279. That's one time. Here we get some specific grant programs. The increase to the existing capacity grant program is funded through some of those reallocations on line 293 at MH, according to the governor's proposal. The Senate also has a proposal from Senator Herr on line 295. This was from the Home Pilot Project. They had a proposal to fund some other community organizations. That's $250,000 per year. That's ongoing. And then the Open Access Connections program from Senator Dietzick Bill at $85,000 per year one time. So that's it for the changes for housing finance. The total new spending for housing finance agencies on line 315 is $16.4 million. Most of that is one time. There's about $3.2 million in the tails. Explore Minnesota Tourism, the only change there, at least in the funding level, is the compensation adjustment of 1.8, but also remember in the bill language, there was sort of a carve-out of their existing money for promotion of the Minnesota Golden Games. That's it for the Explore Minnesota Tourism. Under Department of Labor and Labor and Industry, under the workers' compensation section, there's a compensation adjustment of 1.8. The governor had recommended a $3 million per year funding out of the workers' compensation fund for increases to their or upgrades to their IT system. So those are two changes in the workers' comp section of labor and industry. The next change on line 373 was the language is, was pointed out in the bill. There's sort of a two-year fee reduction to some of the construction code and licensing fees. The labor and industry was proposing sort of a short-term fee reduction to sort of bring the spending and the revenues in balance in that fund. So it'd be a temporary fee reduction. This was in the governor's bill. Under labor and industry standards and apprenticeship, there's a the first one, line 383, is a slight increase of general fund. That's for a compensation adjustment. Under the amendment we adopted today, there's a some money, $50,000 per year, one time for a compliance report. And the language is in the amendment. That's from the general fund. On to page 6. There's also some additional money for the governor recommended some additional money for the apprenticeship program, 542 above the base. Then two other items that were adopted in the amendment today. This is from the Workforce Development Fund, some grants to community organizations and enforcement of labor standards. The grants were for $100,000 per year, and the enforcement of labor standards is at $250 per year, and those are one time from the Workforce Development Fund. Again, that was in the amendment that was adopted today. That is it for changes to labor and industry. There's a small change on line 425. There's a restructuring of the combative sports fees that is already in the language that shows a less slight reduction in revenue and expenditures. The next agency we have is the Bureau of Mediation Services, starting on line 451. Again, there's a compensation adjustment. That's for $426,000. The Public Employee Relations Board, the governor had recommended a $200,000 per year increase, and the Senate is doubling that at $400,000 per year increase. And we're getting the base funding for that was $125,000. And then the there's an additional money there. Page 7. The Workers' Comp Court of Appeals is, again, a compensation adjustment. and then a retirement adjustment for the Workers' Compensation Fund. The IRRB Board, these are all open and statutory appropriations, so there's no change to that. PFA, again, this is their statutory funding. No change to that. Region 3 Occupation Tax, that's open appropriation. No change to that. And the Rochester Destination Medical Center, this incorporates the changes that were made early on in the session. So that's the open appropriation that goes for that we carry in this funding division. Next, we have the Department of Commerce. The one item under petroleum tank is there's some expansion of what the petroleum tank account can be used for. This was in the governor's proposal. That'll have a $200,000 cost to it. Under administrative services, there is a compensation adjustment of a little over $1 million per year. And then the rulemaking for the MinVest program for Senator Bonhoff is shown on line 578 at $130,000 one time. Down to telecommunications. The Senate is proposing splitting up some of the TAM funding that would normally go to the LCC for closed captioning. And the LCC was given the authority to issue some grants to some other state agencies for their IT services for deaf and hard of hearing. And LCC felt it was better for the Department of Admin, the MNET, to do that purpose. So the Senate moved $50,000 per year from the TAM fund over to that, to admin. Under enforcement and market assurance, again, there's some additional funding for healthcare enforcement increase. This is all in the governor's proposal. Additional security staffing. We have the on line 619, the additional money that's being collected for the regulation of the debt collectors, and there will be some revenue that we're collecting also for that. Compensation adjustment, the next line, and the last two items were some proposals from the governor that were not picked up. Under energy resources, on page 8 and 9, the Senate is carrying the governor's $1 million for defense of the Next Gen Act. It's $1 million one time from the general fund. The Senate is not proposing moving the utility assessed costs out of the governor had a proposal to move some of the costs for the that are usually assessed to utilities from the general fund to a special revenue fund. The Senate is not recommending that. We have picked up the governor's ongoing guaranteed energy savings program, $1.1 million per year. That also is paid for with an assessment. Under insurance, again, we have a additional money requested in the governor's bill for health insurance rate review. So that's about $1.3 million general fund. Compensation adjustment. And the international insurance specialist that was recommended in the governor's proposal is not part of this proposal. Then the last item I'll point out on line 672 is from the Senator Coonan bill. This would appropriate $5 million each year for 2 years for the propane pre-purchase program. This would be reimbursed by when the federal LIHEAP dollars come in. So this would allow the state to pre-purchase some of the propane and then get reimbursed later with the LIHEAP money. So that's and nets out at zero. So that is it for commerce. Under PUC, there's a couple small changes. They were requesting some additional money for staffing on line 700. This money would be recaptured in assessment. And also the operating increase basically is their compensation adjustment. That would also be recaptured through assessments, utility assessments. So that is it for the changes to the agencies. On the last page are some of the revenue changes. A lot of these were tied to some of the expenditures. The general fund changes are on line 735. The one I'll point out is a one-time transfer that we do that sort of as a one-time transfer into the general fund. On line 739 is a transfer from the unemployment contingent account of 3.5 per year. This has been done in most other budget bills in the past, usually at a higher rate, usually between 6.5 and 7 million per year.
We need rate.
The rest of them are sort of fees that are being collected in some of the other bills that we've talked about, the debt collectors and MinVest. Next box there is the sort of the all funds expenditures summary by agency, and then the general fund, non-general fund revenue you'll see below that. There are very few changes in there. Guaranteed injury savings, and then you'll see it on the one-time savings for those construction codes, again, are on line 782. Then the last thing to show are transfers happening in the bill. Line 787 is a transfer under deed from the 21st Century Minerals Fund for a biofuels facility. And then also on the next line is the one-time cancellation of $6 million from the Workforce Development Fund back to the fund. That's it.
That's all.
Thank you and good night.
I suppose we could do this a couple of days. We can either just move to pass the spreadsheet and pass the bill and leave, or we can take amendments, I suppose. But the bottom line here is that the spreadsheet is balanced. We're at our targets both on spending and on our tails, and so if amendments are made that change spending, someone's going to have to figure out where it's going to come from, because I'm pretty sure Senator Cohen doesn't want me to pass a bill out of here that's above my target. So if you do have an amendment that is spending more money than the bill is spending, we're going to have to figure out where to get it from if the committee decides to adopt the amendment. So we're going to come up with that idea, too, at the same time. So with that, I guess, are there any amendments?
A couple of questions, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingrid.
A couple of questions. First.
Okay. That's a good idea.
If I could, the bill itself, just in general, I know you talked about no policy here. I'm questioning the game and fish. I think we have probably two game and fish bills in here, one for spearing it and one for I'm trying to think of what the other one is. I think a 84-year-old hunting season. So why is that in the bill? Or what, how did that come about? And is there any expenditures to that?
Is there a reason for it?
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Britton, could you repeat the question? I was otherwise.
The two DNR provisions in here, I know there's been talk about not putting policy in here, and we're wondering, I guess, I know those bills were heard. I was there in the Game and Fish Division, and I'm wondering why they're in here.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
It's certainly the prerogative of the chair, but.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, my understanding is there is some money. I don't know which ones you're talking about. There's actually probably three that are there. There are three that are game and fish. There's the refund for the bear licenses that were overpaid. There's some financial implication there. There's some rulemaking that would otherwise cost the DNR more money to do those musky lakes. And then there are a couple of things that I have to find them in the bill, but. So my understanding is all those three items that I, or five items that I mentioned yesterday that DNR asked, they have put in here, all have some connection to money.
Okay. And the other question, Mr. Chair, if somebody wants to or has an amendment, I assume there is some amendments here, dollars can be taken from any place within the budget, just rejuggle?
Well, provided it passes, yeah.
Right. But I mean, if it's in the DNR budget, it can be taken
out of a different budget?
Well,
on the spreadsheet?
I suppose there's some. I would think you would want to do general fund, and as opposed to specialty funds, because I don't think you would want to take fish and game money to, you know, fund something in deed, for example.
Just want to make it clear.
I would think you'd want to move general fund money if you're going to move something, or move something within that agency at least. Senator Root?
Yes, I have a question about the aquatic invasive species piece. In the back of the bill, we repeal the decal, and then we make reference to Senate File 669, which I've looked up. And I really don't understand what you're doing here about an aquatic invasive species affirmation and how this all works and what this piece is, because I can't tell from this piece. So if I could have an explanation about what this does and doesn't do, because if it's – we didn't hear Senate File 669 in this committee, and so I'd really like to know what this does.
Chair and members.
It's on page 78, excuse me.
I can give you a brief explanation. There may be some detail. This was kind of worked out with the Department of Natural Resources, but if you look on page 78 of the Ag ENVNR document, you'll see the start of that. And what the first part does is it defines what an affirmation is. In other words, this is replacing what was in 669. There's no part of 669 that's really in here. But it replaces it. It was some language that was worked out with some of the proponents and with the DNR. But so it's kind of setting up a new plan for how we're going to get education and ensure that people are educated who are using our boat ramps in the state. So you'll see Section 8 defines what that affirmation means. It means an affirmation of the summary. In other words, and I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work, but you can see that the language there means an affirmation of the summary of the aquatic invasive species laws. So you have to affirm when you're buying your license, when you're buying your watercraft, for residents it'll be a watercraft license, for non-residents it'll be a non-resident fishing license. You have to affirm that you understand the summary of the aquatic invasive species laws. And then Section 9 shows where it's going to be applied. I just mentioned that the watercraft license and the non-resident fishing licenses. And then what's following is you've got the civil penalty if you don't have it available, the $25 fine. That's on 79.17. And then there are two other places where this is inserted, kind of a cross-reference to that affirmation. One is in the watercraft license section, which is on page 80, section 15, where basically to purchase your watercraft license, you'll need to do this affirmation. This starts January 1, 2016 for watercraft license renewals. And then later on, for the non-resident fishing license, that's on page 86. And that's on section 25, where you see for non-residents, they'll have to do that when they buy their non-resident fishing license. So those are the components. And then in the bill, the current law that would take effect starting this summer for the boat trailers, that will be repealed. And this is kind of a replacement of that. And this was language that, and if you want the DNR to give up to talk more about the process or whatever, This is what was handed off to me as what the new agreement is to do this instead of trying to fix up. They were trying to fix up the trailer sticker requirement, and there was still a lot of concerns about how that was going to work, and so they thought this would work better.
Senator Root.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Knopf, so are you envisioning on a person's fishing license they would have this affirmation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood, yes, that's how I envision it, is that you'll have to say that you understand them, and then on your watercraft license for residents, it would have another line on there that the that you did do the affirmation for a non-resident fishing license. I'm assuming there'd be another line. If you know how the electronic licensing system works, you get those little kind of paper kind of with the plastic coating or whatever on it, and I assume there'll just be another line on there. You could talk to DNR or have them come up to talk how they're going to implement this, I have not had a conversation with how it exactly to mean it, but that's how I envision it working.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Knopp, I would like that for the DNR to come up and speak to it. It's a very important information. You know, in my district, it's critical that we not hamper.
Mr. Meyer, did you hear the question?
Mr. Chairman, no, I apologize.
Pretty good timing, though.
Yeah.
Senator Root, go ahead and ask.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, I want to know how this new AIS language will work and exactly what is an affirmation and what is expected of citizens and non-residents as far as the AIS issue.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is some language we've been working on with Senator Saxhog and other folks. Listening to the concerns that we've heard about the original decal proposal, the intent of this language would be that if you are a boat owner, when you register your boat, currently you get, I don't want to use the term stickers, but you get stickers, right? So you get a strip of registration decals, one for each side, and then you get a card that is attached to it. This card is the watercraft registration card, much like you get a motor vehicle registration card. It has the year, the make, the model, the hull ID number, and there's a signature line that says, I certify that the information above is true and correct. The plan is to give the boat registered boat owner another panel this size that will have aquatic invasive species statutes and laws, clean, drain, dry. You are subject to a $500 penalty if you're transporting aquatic macrophytes, plants, water, things like that. The fines double upon second. Whatever, we haven't worked out the exact language yet, but that's the plan. And then probably a link to the training program that we have that'll be on our website. So a link to our data, I mean, off of the internet or web address, I should say, is what I'm trying to say. Then we're going to change the signature line here that says, I certify that the information above is true and correct and that I have read the AIS laws attached or something like that. So that's the plan for watercraft owners. If you're a non-resident coming to the state to buy a fishing license, you will get the same type of information attached directly to your fishing license, and you need to sign your fishing license, and it will have that same sentence there. We'll also work on if you buy your fishing license electronically, now you can go through the internet and you get a code text to your phone. We will make sure that some information is sent along with that email or text to the individual with aquatic invasive species rules and regulations, best management practices. It helps us. The stakeholders that we're working with are really concerned about people knowing the laws and being educated when the laws change. So it gives us those opportunities, but it's not a mandatory test. They don't have to adhere a decal on anything. It also changes the penalties. Right now, this is if you don't have this with you in your boat, it's a petty misdemeanor. And the language, I believe, changes that citation to a $25 civil penalty. So it's just a $25 ticket. You don't go to court. You don't pay court costs or anything. You know, if you get a $125 ticket, by the time you're out of there, it's $200 at least by the time you pay all your fees and everything. So it seems to make sense. I know some of the stakeholders have concerns with it, but the majority of the groups we've been working with do support this direction we're headed.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, thank you. That's a good explanation, and I appreciate you working on this, and I also appreciate us not having decals anymore and doing something that really makes a lot more common sense. So
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, while you're there, so the strip of stickers or decals you get, the Minnesota license or Minnesota emblem with your date and stuff and then the numbers, is there any additional stickers talking about AIS in that strip of stickers, or is it just a signing of a changing of the sentence that you signed that says you affirm it's right and that you've read through the AIS information?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, you will get another panel. So right now you get three panels, one for each side of your boat and then this registration card. There will be a fourth panel that will be attached to that strip that will be printed off that will have the AIS best management practices, let's call it, unfortunately, that has an adhesive-like material on the back of it. So you'll take that. What I would try to tell people is you take the one sticker and you stick it on the back of this registration card. So you have your registration card, you have the AIS laws together. So you'll be getting a piece of paper with adhesive on the back, but you don't have to put it on your boat.
But, Mr. Meyer, could somebody just put it on their boat so they didn't lose it?
Oh, most definitely. I know people who will stick this on their registration card inside their glove compartment or on the hull of their boat or on the transom of their boat. So you could certainly do that, but we aren't going to require anyone to do that.
Okay, just so they have it is what you're saying.
They don't even need to have, Chairman, Senator Westrom, they don't need to have the AIS laws with them. But you do, it is current law that you have this registration card with you that people may or may not know.
And so Mr. Meyer, Mr. Chair, that AIS sticker, for lack of better definition, that would have the types of laws that you want them to affirm they've read and are aware of? Or is there additional training pamphlets or online training that they're supposed to have gone through before they buy their license now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, there is no additional training. What we're asking, and that's why the word affirmation is here, we're trying to make sure that people actually take a few minutes or, you know, and read the laws that are there. And by signing that, it's our hope that if they actually read this, says, wow, I'm signing something that says I understand these laws, I better read them and understand them. So there's no training program. We're just trying to make sure that, trying to raise people's awareness that they should know what the laws are, and we're attaching the laws for their convenience.
And Mr. Meyer, you reference attaching, that's that paper with sticky on it, that would basically have a summary of the laws that would be good for everybody to have read.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, yes.
Okay, one last question on this, Mr. Meyer, Mr. Chairman. You talked about the out-of-state fishing licenses purchased would get similar information. In-state Minnesota would be when you register or re-register your watercraft. Two parts to this question. Anybody in-state buying just a fishing license, let's say they don't own a boat but they buy a fishing license, that is not going to be where they would get this information. It would only be the boat owners and re-registrations. And then the out-of-state folks that are buying fishing license here, what do they do with their boats? Do they have to license them in Minnesota, or is it like cars where they bring it from North Dakota, they get to use their North Dakota boat license to float in our lakes? I'm assuming that's the case, and that's the reason you're giving it on their fishing license. Is that all correct, or what did I state wrong?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, I think that's more than a couple questions, but I'll try to answer what you're looking for there. Right now, we are not talking about supplying this information at the ELS station when you buy your fishing license. We have a number of materials that we distribute at bait stores, at campgrounds, at state parks, at a lot of point of contacts that deal with AIS laws. So it's our hope that resident people who are fishing have a knowledge and understanding of some of those laws. We want to make sure that the boaters understand those, because they're the main concern for a lot of people moving boat to boat, I mean lake to lake, from Minnetonka to where do you go next. You need to make sure if you're going from a infested water to a non-infested water, you're not spreading AIS. So we haven't talked about the fishing license. The boat registrations, the way I understand the laws, and this is the way they are, if your boat is registered in another state, your registration is valid in Minnesota. Just if you were to stay here for, if you had residence in Minnesota but didn't have your boat registration changed, you would need to change that. But if you're coming from Wisconsin and they require boats to be registered, then your registration is valid.
Okay.
As long there's reciprocity is what I'm trying to say. Just like your car.
Yep.
Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, Councilor Staff, I don't have my glasses with me. What's the price tag on this?
Would you like to get your glasses?
No, I want to get out of here, but but they have glasses on.
Would you like to move the spreadsheet?
A little premature.
Mr. Chair, there's some more evil to be done yet today. What's the price tag on this?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Osmick, we don't have any separate rider for this. The DNR has an appropriation from the current AIS account that they would have to
Are you talking about the entire bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The entire bill?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, no. The price tag, Mr. Chair, the price tag on this particular AIS,
okay.
Adding a sticker with the affirmation and all this.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, members, we estimate the fiscal cost of this about $40,000, which is well worth the education that I think that we're going to get through the state. And it's much less than the 300 plus thousand we were anticipating for the decal program itself. So,
Mr. Chair, we're saving money. Never mind. That's better.
I don't want to, when we're winding up the questions of the DNR, I'd like to be next then.
You're next.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Unless you're, because yours on
the DNR. Yeah, to that point, Mr. Chair, so if the, Mr. Meyer, if we spent $300,000, we didn't spend $300,000 on the sticker on the trailer, and I'll call it what it was, sticker on the trailer education piece, where does that money reflected back into the budget now then?
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator Ingebrigtsen, there was never an initial appropriation for that activity when this law was passed in 2012. We have, for the record, compensated the contractor who was developing the program and have paid that person out of FY15 AIS dollars. I believe the payment was about $283,000 for the work that that person has done. So we needed to do that. It was our contractual obligation. That person was working on a project that was going to be paid by the people who were taking that test and training. So we had to pay that person off. And these dollars in the future, as fiscal Dan Mueller said, would come out of the AIS account.
Senator White.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I was curious, you made comments about the balancing of the budget, and I was wondering what your position was going to be with regard to tails if we left you in balance with regard to this biennium. Is there a tails problem if we have a minor change that impacts just the tails?
I think we have a tails target also, right? So I guess there could be. I don't know that that would be as big a problem as changing the bottom line would be, though. So
I was just wondering, and I have an amendment that does have a tails impact, and we have had conversations with Senator Cohen, and he has indicated that he's willing to deal with it in finance. There's a couple of ways we could go with this. You know, it would put your tails out of target, or I could take the language out and let him put it back in finance if there would be a preference on your part.
Well, preference would be to come out of here balanced. So if we can come out of here balanced, that'd be the best way to do it. But I got a funny feeling if it's not balanced, it'll get fixed in finance.
Well, I think it'll get I'm pretty sure it'll get fixed.
Yes.
So
yeah.
If you're okay being a little out of balance on the tails, I'll offer it with the language in there.
Well, I'd rather not do that. So.
Mr. Chair, then I think I'm going to offer the A3 amendment now, and I'll have to do an oral amendment striking on page 1, lines 3 through 11.
$200,000 wasted. Program we're never going to use.
So the A3 amendment, and you want to incorporate the striking of lines, which ones?
3 through 11. That's the
1.3 through 1.
That's the part that's putting you out of balance in your tails.
Okay.
So, you know, there's going to be some costs with this when you get to finance, but they'll have to put the money back in there. Otherwise, they'll have to deal with whatever they're going to do.
Okay, so Senator Scoy, go ahead on the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this is Senator Ress's bill that we heard yesterday. She made a compelling case for getting this information in the hands of parents with regard to toxins that might impact their children. I think it's a good provision. I'd like to move this for Senator Rest and see if we wouldn't be able to move this year. I really think it's important that we do this. As I said, it's no cost in this fiscal year. There are some tails impacts. We have had conversations with Senator Cohen, and my expectation is that he's going to be able to deal with those in finance, and I would appreciate moving this provision along.
Well, any comments or questions on this amendment? Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, just to make the point that, granted, it may not necessarily be a cost to the taxpayers, it is certainly a cost to industry. And all of those costs that we incur or we force upon them are going to be reflected someplace, whether it be to their bottom line, which means to their shareholders, or to the general public itself in higher costs for products.
Senator Skoy.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Osmick, yes, and then you offset those to the benefits to the kids.
And, you know, Senator Skoy, Senator Rest was kind of getting to me with the hockey helmet thing. And I kind of liked that part of it, but the other part was the $1,000 part that I couldn't exactly understand because I got too many explanations on that one. So I wasn't exactly sure who was right and who was wrong on that. But at any rate, I'm not for this, but I understand that some people might be on this committee. And so is there any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, then Senator Skoy moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hands. Senator Dibble, are you voting here? Senator Dibble?
Scott.
Are you voting here?
Oh, sorry. No, he's not.
All opposed? 7-6.
Raise your hand, Mr. Chair.
I told her I'm a no. Okay. On a 7-5 vote, the amendment is adopted. Chair is 0-1. I hope this doesn't continue. Okay, so Senator Saxon.
Mr. Chair, I have the A4 amendment.
Senator Saxog, the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the Energy Intensive Trade Exposed Industries Amendment. It would be added on page 69, line 20. This amendment sets up a process through which the PUC, whereby our energy intensive industries could negotiate electrical rates for presentation and review by the commission. And the amendment specifically protects low-income ratepayers. It includes a fee and funding to expand outreach to low-income people for the energy programs that we have to help them. And the EITE, which is the Energy Intensive Trade Exposed Industries Amendment, was heard twice in Senate Environment and Energy. This amendment is important to investor-owned utilities. It's important that for instance, Senator Skoy's mills, Senator Herr's mill down here, and I would encourage adoption of the amendment.
Any discussion?
I granted, it's not their fault. It's
their pages sure. That are bumping. Subdivision 3, Senator Saxog, can you go through that one real quickly with the committee on the amendment?
You mean on 2.16?
I'm sorry, 2.16, that's correct.
It's low-income funding upon, you want me to just read it or what?
Give me a description.
can somebody describe this for Senator Saxon?
Mr. Chair, hang on. I got it figured out.
You got it figured out?
Yep,
okay,
I got it.
Never mind. Okay, any questions or comments from the committee on the A0004? Do I have to do the CDF?
Yeah.
CDF amendment. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if this amendment follows exactly what was passed in Energy and Environment and Energy Policy Committee.
Senator Saxok.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scalzi. You know, I wasn't in that, and don't know for sure. Is there somebody that can give us some testimony as to the difference between the two, if there is?
Go ahead and say your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Andrew Maratska, attorney at the law firm Stoll Reeves. Represent a group of companies known as the Minnesota Large Industrial Group. It's comprised of a number of mines, paper mills, steel mill, et cetera. 15 large industries in the state that consume about 6.5 billion kilowatt hours each year and pay in excess of $350 million. This amendment, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, but is slightly different than the version that was heard twice in Senate Energy.
Ms. Fontaine-Well.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I would just say that one of the key differences is that the bill that was heard in Senator Marty's committee does only apply to Minnesota Power territory. This would be statewide.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was my understanding. I was, since it is such a encompassing amendment, I believe that it was only the Minnesota Power territory that was covered because of the cost.
Senator Marty or Senator Saxok.
Well, and that refreshes my memory, and that's probably correct, and that's why I made the comment that, for instance, the largest sawmill in Minnesota is Potlatch's Mill up in Hubbard County, just outside of Bemidji, and that's Otter Tail Power. That's not Minnesota Power. There's several other mills in the Bemidji area that we would have that same problem if it was just Minnesota Power, and of course. I just referred to Senator Herr's mill down here, too, which wouldn't be covered.
Senator Marty, where were you that that you knew exactly when this
Mr. was? Mr. Chair, I heard this amendment was here. Mr. Chair, this does not look exactly the same as what we passed out. And when we had our committee hearing on it and discussion on it, we did talk a bit about who covers what and everything else and what territory it's involved. And I frankly think the way the language is written, that there are a whole lot of people that most businesses, any business that has 10% of their cost of production would be able to say, you know, this is going to hurt us. Electric rates are hurting us. We need it, even if it's not the factor in competition. And one of the things I think some of the folks who weren't supporting my provision in our committee said was, you know, this is picking winners and losers. And this whole concept is picking winners and losers. And the losers are every other business and every residential customer who is going to pay more for this. I think the reason for doing it in Minnesota Power territory is because, frankly, more than half of their entire base comes from a dozen customers. And if a significant number of those major customers drop off, if they all drop off, they'd lose half of their demand, and everybody else would be paying significantly more. There is a provision in our existing law that Gerdau Steel in the East Metro area has used in the past, where they can get lower rates by showing they have a competitive need for it. And I would argue that this is pure policy and, among other things, doesn't belong in a finance bill. I know there's a provision at the end saying, well, put $10,000 into an account, but that's nothing to do with the rest of the bill. So my pitch would be that you keep it out of the bill purely for because it's policy that doesn't belong in a budget bill, and also the other bill is moving. We will have a chance to debate it on the floor. So I would urge people to not include this amendment for that reason. And again, I understand that, but simply because you're a very large electric user, regardless of how much you try and do efficiency or anything else, you can say, hey, we get this lower rate. And I will guarantee you that will jack up every residential customer in those utility territory. And this will do that. My version would do it for Minnesota Power, but theirs is a unique situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, just a couple of comments. First of all, we've had this conversation before about many of these areas where these are located, and that many of them are in rural areas, and the jobs of the residents are at these plants, and it's important for them to keep the plants viable, and many of them are willing to let that small shift occur onto their utility bills in order to make sure that their industry is viable. But my main point is that some of what's happening is if you've got a oriented strand board plant that's in the Minnesota Power Service provider, they're going to be receiving the break, and you could have a mill in Senator Herr or my district that wouldn't, and they're trying to compete in the same marketplace, Norbord, you know, versus what's in Cloquet or Grand Rapids, and that's the problem. Without doing something along the lines of what Senator Saxog is proposing here, that you have, you know, isolated the Minnesota Power Service area, but there are plants outside of that that are competing on the same market.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick points of clarification. First, with all due respect to Mr. Marty, Senator Marty, the Gerdau mill is not operating under a discount. There was a contract that was negotiated that allowed for a discount to be achieved if certain amounts of energy were consumed. But the fact of the matter is that Xcel's rates are so high that there's an economic incentive to shift that production to Texas. So they're not receiving a discount. In fact, they're paying well above the average cost of energy. Second, by limiting it to the Minnesota Power Service territory, you do, in fact, create a perverse incentive to potentially incent businesses to shift production to the Minnesota Power Service territory. For example, USG Interiors, Inc., which has facilities in Cloquet and Red Wing, Minnesota, one of their facilities would be included, the one in Cloquet. The one in Red Wing would not, under Senator Marty's bill. And that is a problem that was discussed somewhat in Senator Marty's committee, but wanted to put a finer point on it.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I could go over a lot of the specific language in this bill. There are about five or six things I quickly catch that are different from the bill that we passed out of our committee. My point is you are dealing with a budget bill, not a policy bill. Senate has been very clearly instructed to keep policy out of budget bills. This is a policy provision. We should debate these things in a policy committee. We should debate them on the floor. I'm committed to bringing this in front of the floor, and we will discuss it. If people want to make a case for changing it, expanding it, I think that's a fair thing to do. But I don't think this is the place to do the discussion.
Senator Marty, I don't disagree with you on the policy part. However, the amendment has been offered, and since the amendment has been offered, I think we're going to vote on it. And if it goes in the bill, we'll see what happens after that. But I know that for sure, that what we're hearing in an area of my area of the state where people are being laid off and they're competing on an international basis, that when power costs are 25% of the cost of the business, that at some point in time, Senator Scoy's point about people willing to pay a little bit more on their power bills in order to keep the jobs in the area is very valid. And I think there's also if I'm not mistaken, there is an appeal to the PUC to before any rates go up. Is that correct, Senator Saxog, in this bill, I think? So it's similar to any other type of rate increase request, and so I think it's a fair bill. But like I said, I realize the policy part, and there is some money in this bill. But at the same time, it's it's been offered in front of the committee, and it's been asked to be voted on. So, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I would plan to support Senator Saxog, and I guess just for consultation or consoling Senator Marty, I mean, it's almost impossible to separate policy and finance bills because you always have intermixing, and in the end, that usually gets to be what meshes together. And you know, I think it's there's a long road left for some of these bills, and that's this is a good way to formulate stuff, but it doesn't mean it becomes the final product. And so I'm not so concerned about
Senator Dibble.
That, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. First, a question: where I'm just not seeing where it is that the PUC can do what they will or overcome the special deal that's being cut for these energy-intensive companies.
Fontaine Doyle, is that in there somewhere? Did I misspeak?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, can you repeat? I didn't hear the last.
Oh, where is the PUC's authority spelled out?
I think on line 2.4. Is that it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator.
The language in this bill, which is again different from mine in many ways, the Commission shall, upon a net finding on 2.2, finding a net benefit to the utility or the state, approve. That they shall approve it. Ours has they shall approve it if they find it is a net benefit based on a number of factors like the impact on other customers and so on. And I'll also point out that in this case, again, just because you're big, even if it's no competitive pressures or realistically you're going to live with it, one of the largest consumers in probably the largest user in the XL territory is a big refinery, which is not planning to move anywhere. They've got billions invested in infrastructure here. They couldn't move if they wanted to. Of course, they'd like lower electric rates. Everybody would, but everybody else pays for it. It is picking winners and losers, and I recognize that in the whole concept. But again, as Senator Scoy pointed out, you know, at some points people are willing to do that because they see it'll keep job in the community. I'm saying let's go slow. Let's be cautious about this. Let's address it where the need is very obvious right now. That's why I'd encourage you to not put this in the bill here and deal with it in the floor on the other bill.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll just say that Senator Marty worked very, very hard on a lot of elements, and I thought brought a very, very thoughtful proposal. Committee members in the policy committee disagreed on a number of them and kind of reserved their right to continue that debate and that discussion. Already, Senator Marty, at the point that he brought the proposal forward, as the policy chair, I'll add, he's the chair of a policy committee, had provided a lot of accommodations and a lot of compromises, as is Senator Marty's inclination to do. He works very, very hard at figuring out the balance between the public's interests and private interests and all the major political forces that are coming at ideas like this. He did a lot of really, really good work. And this just simply completely overcomes and undercuts the work of the committee and the work of one of our policy chairs, and I think it shows a tremendous amount of disrespect. I'm really disappointed to see this.
Any other comments? Senator Hur.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the testimony from the Gerdau representative. Gerdau is actually in my district. It's the bottom tip of my district. And I know that might be affecting job, but I at this point in time, I don't have enough information to choose a decision of supporting Senator Saxhall, even though it have a mill in my district. Based on that, I don't even know how many people in my district are working at Gerdau or how many people in the St. Paul Metro Twin City working there. I mean, it's more like a Minnesota decision, you know, which I'm a part of. But at this point, I don't want my decision to influence other senator here, but I would not support the amendment.
Senator Scalzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have worked very hard all year. I would echo Senator Dibble's comments. This has been a very long process, and the process is not yet over. I believe that this would take the process back to the very beginning, and we would be working on issues all over again that we have spent a good share of our time on this legislative session so far. So I would not support that amendment at this time.
Okay. This appears to be maybe the second amendment in a row that might be policy. And one was adopted. And so we're getting either really inconsistent or really consistent, one or the other in here. But I don't see any more comments, any more questions. Anybody else need to comment on this? Senator Saxhog, do you still want to move this?
I think so.
Okay, so on the Saxhog amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion is adopted. Are there any more amendments? Senator Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, I have the A-12 amendment.
Senator Schmidt has the A0012CDF.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could outline this a little bit here. This it reflects an idea that came to us late this session, and we didn't have an opportunity to hear the bill in this committee. However, it represents a great opportunity for Minnesota.
Which may be a problem, but go ahead.
Well, okay. Nonetheless, right. We have a great opportunity to take advantage of something that's happening organically here in Minnesota, and that's the burgeoning water technology cluster. We have a number of really impressive firms that have done some great work in Minnesota over the past, Ecolab, Pentair, Osmotics come to mind, and their investment in technologies ranging from reverse osmosis to desalinization. And we have a second wave of these companies that are rising forward that could really benefit from an infusion of some seed capital to organize their efforts to look towards some applied research and to form a more cohesive cluster. And you talk a lot about agglomeration in economics and how location and concentration of firms matters. We have something very impressive here in Minnesota organically, but in order to take that next step and for this industry to meet its potential, I think a stronger partnership between the public and private and nonprofit sectors is warranted. And originally I was asking for $1 million over the course of the next 2 years to start a multi-phase cluster development approach. What we're asking for here is $250,000 either from the Business Development Competitive Grant Program or the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership. And Ms. Fontaine, if you don't mind speaking to that when time is right. I do have a couple of individuals who are very active in this industry and could provide some incredible testimony if we give them an opportunity to speak to this. But we are at a tipping point, but a very important stage where we can grow the momentum that's happening organically, or we can be silent as a legislature and risk having this peter out. And so with that said, Mr. Chair, if you'd be interested in hearing a little testimony on what we're discussing here, I'd appreciate that.
I'm going to allow some testimony, but we haven't heard this, and so I'm probably not going to support it, but go ahead and tell us what you think. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Senator Schmidt, for your introduction. My name is Jeremy Lenz. I'm a private consultant. And last year, I was hired by Greater MSP to interview the leading water technology companies in the state of Minnesota. And I had the pleasure of meeting with some of the most senior leadership in the state at 22 of our companies, including public leaders at the Metropolitan Council. And along the way, the industry leadership made it very clear to me the opportunities that were presented to Minnesota and the global challenges that we read about every day relating to water. The industry itself is defined as customers that would be in drinking water, wastewater, and industrial water, which probably touch every one of your districts in one way, shape, or form. The findings that we've found along the way when we interviewed these companies was there are five key findings, and there's an urgency of action because of the scarcity issues that are happening around the world. There's a unique opportunity in Minnesota in the water and the global water technology marketplace. There's a willingness, especially in the small companies, to get organized. There's a need for coordination. The University of Minnesota, for example, when I met with their leadership, they talked about how, in some ways, it's hard to prioritize which areas of water, because it's so deep, their expertise is so deep and across many different sectors. And then there's a need for focus, which really reinforces that point. Along the way, I was able to meet a woman at the EPA, the U.S. EPA, who is coordinating 14 different water clusters around, regional water clusters around the country that are focused on economic competitiveness for their for the country. And Minnesota is not one of them, even though we are 10th in the country in terms of exports, according to the Minnesota Trade Office. So there are 14 that are organizing, and we're already in 10th, and we're not at the level of organization that the other regions are around the country. So we received a letter of collaboration from the EPA to help with that effort, and we we're excited about them inviting us to have Minnesota's leadership at the national conversation. With me today is Dr. Ryan Gottfried from Tonka Water. He is a senior vice president for operations at Tonka Water and a local expert in a lot of different areas. And I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Gottfried, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Senator, before you go ahead, Senator Schmidt, I just got an idea here. Why instead of doing an appropriation here, why don't we just make this eligible for the competitive grant program, and they can submit an application to DEED to try and compete for the money? And the people at DEED can maybe judge whether or not they should be getting the money. And I that way you won't have to have any money in this thing, and we can make it eligible for the competitive grant program.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that recommendation. I want a path forward for this because they truly are at a tipping point here in terms of building momentum and trying to engage the private sector in meaningful dialogue. So I guess my amendment is my preference. I'd really like to have this clear in law that we're serious about funding this effort. I don't know if you have a recommendation on how exactly we spell out that they'd be eligible.
Well, I think we could probably do that real quickly. Mr. Fontaine Doyle could take the money out and make them eligible in some way, shape, or form.
And Mr. Chair, are you referring to the Business Development Competitive Grant Program?
Yes. What do you think?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I guess we could insert some language after the Business Development Grant Program and say an organization, a nonprofit, Minnesota-based nonprofit with demonstrated expertise in water technology is eligible to receive a grant under this paragraph.
Is eligible to apply for a grant.
Well, apply and receive, I guess, depending on what you want. They already would be eligible to probably apply, but.
If that's good with you, why don't we withdraw this until she comes up with some language and maybe fixes it for you? Does that work?
I think that's a path forward for us, so I would accept that.
Okay.
Would you like to hear any more testimony while they're here?
Or? You want more testimony, or are you happy?
We're good. All right.
Okay. All right. So, Senator Schmidt will withdraw the A0012CDF amendment.
Sure. And, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that we'll have language before us again here this afternoon to pull into the bill.
As soon as Ms. Fontaine-Doyle gets or Doyle Fontaine okay. gets it done, she will. You will let me know, okay? How's that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there any other amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hurd, do you have an amendment?
I'm not sure what number of amendment I do, but this is based on Senator Metzen's request, and I'm the closest senator to his district. So,
is he teaching you bad things?
I learned a lot since the last 2 years, so I don't know whether it's good or bad. But this is regarding
Mr. Chair, members, excuse me, the A0007 CDF amendment. Mr. Chair, this would be coming from the amount that is already in the bill. This would be just specify that this amount is for a feasibility study.
So the A0007 CDF amendment that's being offered by Senator Kerr, the money is already in the bill. That was in the author's amendment at the beginning of the committee hearing today. So this is just a matter of putting the language in the bill. So. On the her amendment, all those in favor.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Just want to say for the record, so I preserve my rights, I'm a little skeptical that this looks like a transportation related matter, but I'm just noting it for the record that I'm relinquishing my claim to this language.
Senator in my bill. Dibble,
not because, if you would like,
I can pass this over to your committee without any problem at all. But if you're okay with me putting it in here, I will, and then we can have the discussion later.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Why don't we do that? I suspect it'll be fine. It has transportation all over it.
All right. I wanted
but I'm
that myself.
Sure, it'll be fine. But we can talk some more. Okay. Thanks, and I'll support the amendment.
Okay. On the HERA motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Are there any other amendments, Senator
yes.
Scoy?
Yes.
You have an, I'm sorry. Wait. I think Senator Scoy had his hand up first. Or
no, you wherever, I don't
Senator Scalzi, you had. You
thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A7 amendment to Ag, Environment, and Natural Resources. Mr. Chair and members, this was my bill from yesterday, for which I was instructed, since the bill had already been printed, to bring up the amendment after the printing and get the work on the language. So I have two amendments that relate to the SCORE funds, which is the garbage tax that every resident and business pays into the general fund, actually. 30% of it is going to the general fund. This amendment, the A7 amendment, as you see it, details what purposes for which the money may be spent. So on line 1.21, the change there is to prevent food waste or collect and transport food donated to money to humans or to be fed to animals. And through lines 1.25 related to the anaerobic digesters.
So is there's no money in this amendment?
My second amendment has money in it, for which I will speak at a separate time.
So
if you want me to speak to both of them, I would do that.
It's going to be interesting to see how the majority leader reacts to this bill. So are there any questions or comments to the A7.AG.ENV.NR amendment? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have the A8 amendment with the same acronym following it, AG.ENV.NR. And this does include an appropriation, and I would like to explain this. If you recall the testimony that we had yesterday related to the garbage tax that every business and resident pays in Minnesota. If you go home and you look at your garbage bill tonight, you're paying a 9.7% tax. If you have own and operate a business property in Minnesota, you pay a 17% tax. What's happening with this tax is that property taxes are being collected and being transferred to the general fund. The tax receipts from your garbage tax in Minnesota achieve $70 million is collected on everyone's garbage bill. 30% of that goes to the general fund. So 30% of that is $21 million. The counties who are collecting this tax through the garbage receipts receive $21 million. I said that wrong. And yet then they are gathering through SCORE grants the $21 million. So in effect, your property taxes are being transferred to the general fund. I see the tax chair is here, and I want him to hear this because this is exactly what's happening. Property taxes are being transferred to the general fund through the garbage tax collection. What I'm proposing is, I understand this is not in balance. This would make your bill out of balance.
Owned by about $20 million, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But what I'm hearing today is that the closed landfill fund, which is directly connected to your garbage tax. All of our garbage goes to landfills. As they're closed, we have a closed landfill fund. And we've used that closed landfill fund for many purposes. It's $61 million now, I heard. And on line 190, we draw down $33 million. On line 347 and 359, we're creating a new fund, $10 million a year. Now, I'm not a creative finance expert, nor am I a tax expert. But I understand that it's not right that property taxpayers are contributing this money to the general fund, and residents and businesses are funding the general fund through their garbage tax. And we have to correct this. And the only appropriate place to correct this would be through the closed landfill fund that we've discussed today.
So maybe I should have Mr. Mueller explain to you that $10 million better.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scalzi, the $10 million repay back to the closed landfill fund was part of our target with Senator Cohen. Our target was increased at some point by $20 million, and we accomplished that by drawing down the closed landfill fund from $48 to $28 million, with the caveat that that $20 million gets paid back in the tails. So this is part of the funding target we have with Senator Cohen for the committee, is to pay back that $10 million per year. How this amendment would work would make that payback harder, or we'd have to find some other reduction in tails somewhere else in our bill to make our bill even and balanced.
So, Senator Scalzi, let me make a suggestion also on this one.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think with the bill that we presented yesterday, we did not ask that this be funded immediately because we understand that's a problem. But there would be money in the tails, for instance, in 2019. What we have to continue to work to do is to prevent this property tax transfer to the general fund.
Senator Scalzi, let me just suggest that you withdraw this and have a discussion with Senator Cohen, because if Senator Cohen says you can have another $20 million, then I might be able to say yes. But at this point in time, I would have to oppose the amendment because it definitely blows my target really badly. So you go ahead and decide what you want to do. I've allowed every author to take a vote if they want to, but I would be encouraging people not to vote on this, and I vote no, and I don't know that you want a no vote on this.
And Mr. Chair, thank you for that clarification. And I will at this time withdraw this amendment, and I will take it up with Senator Cohen. I want this on the public record, though, because when I speak with Senator Cohen, that will not be on the public record. This is a travesty that people are paying taxes as they pay their garbage bill, and that money is going to the general fund. That's not right. It affects every county in the state. This bill was brought forward by the counties, and we want to take care of this problem once and for all. And so, therefore, Mr. Chair, I will at this time withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Scalzo.
Mr. Chair.
Are there any other amendments? Senator Dibble?
I just want to say that I'm in strong support of Senator Scalzi and what she's attempting to accomplish in this amendment. And I think we should all seek to. I mean, this is a big deal. You know, it's a flat out diversion to the general fund taxes that was originated for a different purpose. And so, thanks for bringing it forward. And I'll work with Senator Scalzi to figure this out.
It's one of the hardest budgeting things we do is when something's been dedicated to the general fund that should be going somewhere else, and then we try and fix it. All of a sudden, there's a great big cost to it. And this is one of those things
that'll teach us to. Yeah. Raid those special funds.
Yes, so.
Hard to undo in the future. Gotta
hard to do.
Buy it back, as it were. It's hard to do.
Are there any other amendments? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A5 amendment.
Simple A5?
And, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, before Senator Westrom, this is the A0005 CDF. Amendment.
How to get those zeros
in there.
Mr. Chair, members would ask your support for this. This would be allowing fireworks that are currently not allowed to be sold in this state. And many of us have heard this discussion different places, different times, and this would allow the sales tax, frankly, that's being deposited in all our neighboring states, with the products being brought back here merely to just find their way back into our state and allow this product to be sold only from the months of June to July 7th, leaving some restrictions in place, mostly around the 4th of July celebration time with summer events. And I know the Senate's passed this language before, and I think it is a ripe time to adopt this language and allow it here in Minnesota.
So, Carrie.
Does this raise some money?
What's that?
Does this raise some money?
Well, Mr. Chair, it would raise money.
Is this a tax issue?
It's not really a tax issue. It's just a matter of more products, something being sold in our state that is otherwise being bought in another state. Three years ago, there was an estimate in one of the news reports that this was projected to bring in $5 to $6 million of sales tax collected that currently isn't collected because product can't be sold here. We do allow some fireworks, as you know, but not the aerial ones that this would mimic what our neighboring states sell.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, Mr. Chair, this is where I'm going to confuse you, like I did on the floor. You know, sometimes I'm libertarian, let people buy alcohol when and wherever the heck they want.
I was totally confused today. There was no doubt about it.
Me too. I was confused by you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Libertarian, let everyone do everything they want, wherever they want, whenever they want. I'm opposed to the substance of this bill, but I also think it's policy only. I also would just acknowledge the fact that not that it should necessarily impinge upon the legislative deliberation or decision-making, but if I recall correctly, the governor is not in favor of this policy.
Does anybody want to testify on the fireworks amendment? I don't see anybody. So I think Senator Dibble's right. This is another policy issue, but it's not as if we haven't voted on them before in this committee today. So do what you want. All those in favor of the A0005 CDF amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Cheers. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed? Bipartisan approval and disapproval. The motion does not prevail on a hand count of 6-8. Are there any other? Senator Saxhog.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have an oral amendment from the Agricultural Appropriations Bill. Page 70, line 70.9. And I think that the DNR will concur with this. I would like to delete from the semicolon on and to must not be used as a substitute for traditional spending by the organization.
And this is referring to what?
Altering vehicles in public lands.
Okay. All right. And the DNR concurs?
Yeah,
it's Bobby Myers. Okay. All right. Yeah, okay. All right. Does everybody understand the amendment?
No.
No.
Okay.
Mr. Knopf. Is there a paper? Is there a copy of it somewhere?
No, this is an oral amendment.
This is an oral amendment. Just Mr. Chair and members, it would be on line 70.7 to delete the colon, delete the paren one paren, and then on line 70.9, delete everything after organization. And then delete everything on 70.10, delete 70.11. What this would do is just say, it would say grants issued under this paragraph must be issued through a formal agreement with the organization, and it would stop there and not include the language that says it must not be used as a substitute for traditional spending by the organization. That would be consistent with the language that's been in the past. I'm not sure. We used some of the administration language in putting this bill together, and I'm not sure why Clause 2 was added. I don't know if there's somebody here from the DNR that can speak if they really need the language in Clause 2.
I think the DNR is okay with this, but go ahead, Mr.
Meyer. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bob Meyer, DNR, we do support the change. It was language that we put into the governor's bill that should not have been there, so we do appreciate Senator Saxart cleaning this up for us.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on it? Okay, seeing none on the Saxhog oral amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. All right. Any other? Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, and I talked to you before the meeting about this amendment dealing with the study on Clean Water Corps of Engineers, and it has a cost, and I was just wondering if you had any thoughts about...
Which one is this?
It's Keith Carlson. The county folks brought this to us. A1. And it's got a cost, and so I've been kind of sitting here wondering if you had any thoughts about it or if I should just forget it.
Can we reduce it?
Well, Mr. Chair, I've had some conversations with Mr. Carlson, and since Senator Dibble is here, he has indicated that there is some CASA formula money that deals with this sort of stuff for county roads that might potentially be a source of revenue, but that would be in the Transportation Committee.
Where would this money come from?
So,
Senator Dibble.
My name, Mr. Chair. Just 10 seconds ago, I had this conversation out in the hallway. I support this idea. And I don't completely understand, but I think there's some like unspent dollars out of the administrative there's unspent dollars out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Yeah, maybe Mr. Carlson can explain what
Chair.
He was thinking about. Administrative dollars that have to do with state aid
Mr. Chair.
To counties and cities.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members, Keith Carlson from Minnesota Intercounty Association. Each year for the cost of administration of the county state aid highways program, 2% is deducted from the net resources available to the department for that program. That amount this year was about $11 million, and then what is unspent from that allocation is returned in the subsequent year. This year, the amount returned was $3.6 million. We have had discussions with the assistant state engineer, and he said that is a feasible way for them to fund this program, and this is a high priority for all the county engineers.
Senator
Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, we would have to take this up in the transportation bill and spend transportation dollars in this bill. If that's the source that we want to use.
So, if we,
I'm supportive. So, I'll bring it in.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, where are you in process? Is this something you can deal with in your committee?
Oh, yeah, we're putting together the...
We'll just let him deal with
we're
it.
We're putting the bill together this weekend. So.
Is that okay, then?
It's up on Monday, yeah.
Okay, so we'll withdraw this and we'll deal with it in transportation.
Very good.
That's good.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dibble. I appreciate it. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-12 amendment, and I would call in front of us, if I could, for testimony real quickly, Mr. Bart Poach from the dry cleaners. Mr. Chair and members, we had a rather long discussion the other day with regards to the dry cleaners situation in Minnesota, where they've been paying dues, fees for years for their own cleanup and have been taking care of their own cleaning up of properties over the years. And that fund now, of course, is being depleted due to the fact that we're moving down from 350, I understand, folks to businesses down to 150, and What I would like to do is I'd like to take 743, actually, which would be about half of what their request was. And Senator, I talked to Mr. Chair, I talked to you earlier. Their request was about $1.4 million. This would be about half. And I would like it taken out of the remediation fund. And I would like, if I could have him, Mr. Poach, testify, he's got some interesting information for us.
Thank you, Chair, members. The
say your name for the record, please.
Gary Poach from the Minnesota Cleaners Association. Thank you, Chair, members. We were here a couple days ago, and I appreciate the time. I know it's valuable here. The instructions were for MPCA to come back, and they did yesterday morning. They're agreeing with the money appropriations with a couple of items. And one is that developers can never use the fund. And we agree with half of that. We think if you can't find a responsible party, the developer shouldn't be able to use our clean fund. But our industry is very, very small, and we got to compromise. If there's a responsible party available, then they should be able to use the fund. Let me give you a quick example. It won't take long. There's a few cleaners in a situation like Affordable Cleaners of Virginia, and we have Clothing Care in Elbert Lee, Skyline in Little Canada, Quality Cleaners in White Bear Lake, Genie's Magic, Hallmark, Prestige Cleaners in Minneapolis, Vanity Cleaners in Grand Rapids, and Quality Cleaners in White Bear Lake. We all have one thing in common. We have small properties. We have 1,000, maybe 2,000 square feet. No developer is going to get rich. Up in Brainerd, there's an Anderson Cleaner. She's a fourth-generation dry cleaner, believe it or not, over 100 years. She's 65, 67. Her and her husband are thinking about retiring. In Brainerd, there's two dry cleaners. That town probably only needs one. So she's been paying, and all the cleaners have been paying in the last 20 years, the small cleaners, $100,000 to $200,000 over the last 20 years. And these people may not be able to sell to somebody that wants to be a dry cleaner because they only need one there. So they know dry cleaning. They know how to get spots out most of the time. They don't know nothing about selling property. And sometimes, just like people coming to the legislature doesn't need a lobbyist to pass a bill, sometimes they do. Well, sometimes a person in Brainerd who wants to sell can only sell their property. So they might have to use a developer, maybe the mayor or the council person there or somebody is a go-between to have Joe, the marine guy who works on the motors, to create jobs out of that plant. So we think we have a compromise. If you can't, PCA has not agreed to this, but we understand where if you can't find the responsible party, a developer, no matter how big they are, or small town developer, real estate agent, maybe considered a developer, should be able to use the fund, but the big guys, if there's no responsible party, shouldn't be. This is a good bill for small cleaners, and every one of these small cleaners, and there's only 140 of us, can use that support and use that security so they can sell, turn that into something else, retire without worry.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, okay, just to keep this thing going forward, and I think this will work. I'm not sure PCA will like it very much, but staff has a suggestion that if we take the money from the remediation fund.
He suggested we got to fix the language.
Okay, we need to fix the language, though. So you got to fix or no?
Mr. Chair, it would be on line 1.3 of the amendment after a year, insert from the remediation fund.
Would you like to incorporate that?
Yes.
Okay, it sounds to me like this is still a work in progress, and this will at least keep it alive. Mr. Kudelka, you want to make a comment on it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Benon. Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The only difference between this language and the bill that was before the committee now is a smaller amount of dollars. So it it's a half a Band-Aid to the larger problem with the dry cleaner account. So that it still will run in a deficit. Those dry cleaners who have paid in and are deemed a responsible party and liable for a cleanup will not get their funding. I think it would be, we have proposed a way that would allow for dry cleaners who operated a facility to continue to use the fund and make sure the money was there when they needed, but allow those third parties that do not have a connection to the dry cleaner to go elsewhere for funds. Our concern is this creates a precedent where the state now will cover the cost for a responsible party, and as such, we are opening the door for much larger times where the state would bail out a company that pollutes.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe to Mr. Kabelka and maybe to Mr. Poach, I don't know which one. The question that keeps rolling around in my head on this is we're talking about dry cleaners that are going to have been paying in for 20 years. They're going to sell the business, but, you know, they can't sell it because it's cleaned up. What I don't understand is why the dry cleaners, before they sell, don't just access the fund and do the cleanup. I don't get that. It seems to me if I was a dry cleaner going to sell my business and there was a fund that I'd been paying into for 20 years, I'd just go to the fund, access the resources, clean up my lot or business or whatever has to happen, and then I'd put it up for sale. I don't understand why that isn't the process that we're following.
Chairman?
Mr. Poach.
Senator? One of the big problems with that is time frame. There's just not enough time. A developer can come in there, even if it's a small town developer in Brainerd, and pay for the cleanup, and they got the funds to wait for the reimbursement period. That dry cleaner doesn't. That's the main reason.
Well, but Mr. Chair, Mr. Poach, the developer's accessing the same fund. That's what the confusion is here. I don't understand why the owner doesn't do it and then sell it to the developer. It seems to me that would accomplish the goal.
Chairman, Senator, the problem is that the funds aren't available right away, so the developer has his own money that he can pay, and then he can wait for the money.
Okay, I got it.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. With regards to setting a precedent, we now clean up properties. I don't think the MPCA is certainly in the business of saying we shouldn't clean up our ground. We do it through the petrol fund now. We do it through other funds. So to say that we're going to be setting a precedent that tax dollars are going to be utilized, these people have not borrowed a dollar yet from the state of Minnesota that I know of. At least that's in the testimony. And they're just running out of money, and the cost of it has just become prohibitive, and we certainly want to clean it up. So I think this is a good compromise.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, a little to Senator Scoy's point, and maybe it is a beginning of another piece to this puzzle, but I'm dealing with a ACRA fund matter in my district, and there it's an elevator trying to access dollars out of the fund, and some of the expenses that are going or not approved or approved, and we're getting into that. But one of the things that they talked about, and it's to this point, Senator Scoy, is the developers or the business, in my case, in the ACRA fund, and I assume that the dry cleaners sounds like it's the same, you have to do everything and then submit your receipts and hope you get reimbursed. And in my constituent's case, they're now being denied on some reimbursements, yet the ACRA fund specialist told them that this was part of the property they were supposed to remediate, and then now after the fact is telling them not to remediate, or they aren't going to pay them for it. I'm wondering if there is a way into the department. I hope you're listening. Maybe you could propose a way for a dry cleaner to get estimates and project costs and work out this cash flow situation, because a bigger elevator might have the means to borrow that kind of money from the bank for 6 months or a year or 2 years until they get recovered the funds. But a smaller dry cleaning business, I think, if I'm hearing this right, that becomes a real problem financially. But if the funds are there, maybe we could set it up so in small cases the department would get projections and let some of the money go as the project is happening. That maybe would help some of this, Mr. Chair. Just food for thought as we are trying to remedy a problem here. Senator Scoy, I think you made a good point.
Senator Scoy.
This probably to Mr. Mueller. So the 743 is coming from the remediation fund, and it's for deposit in the dry cleaner environmental response and reimbursement account in the remediation fund. So where's the gain? I don't get the gain.
Mr. Chairman, it is an account in the fund, but once it's in that account, it's sort of the sole source of that account. I mean, maybe Mr. Kadelka can help a little bit, but there are a number of different accounts in the
I think Senator Scoy's point is that the language maybe needs to be fixed here.
Well, Mr. Chair, something doesn't make sense to me here. I don't know where it's coming from. I guess there's it's coming out of one of the other remediation accounts and going into the dry cleaner account.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy.
Take care of thank you.
You'll have a transfer in the bill, transferring from the Environmental Fund. I don't know, $40 million, something like that, during the biennium. That just this transfer gets put in the remediation fund. So this would take it from that. If you want to be clear, if you want it to be even more clear, you could just say from the general account in the remediation fund, because there's a balance in the fund. There's several small accounts in there. Most of it's just in that general remediation fund. So if you wanted to be really clear about it, you could, instead of what was suggested earlier, you could say from the general account in the remediation fund.
Mr. Chair, I don't.
Oh yeah, that works. So there's a dry cleaner environmental response and reimbursement account in the remediation fund. Okay, so that's where this would be going into. Okay, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe. I don't know who to. I'm just going to ask the question if somebody can answer it. So if we take the money out of the general remediation fund and put it into the dry cleaner fund, what kind of projects would be not being funded because this money is not in the general fund? I mean, it has to have an impact on something. Or is it just extra money that's there?
Who wants it?
Well, Mr. Mueller. Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, the general remediation account usually is the main source for things like the landfill cleanup on Superfund type of projects. And Senator or Mr. Kadelka might have something to add.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it staffs four different groups: our emergency response teams, our Superfund staff that oversees cleanup, our voluntary investigation and cleanup programs where our third parties doing cleanup to make sure they're doing it correctly, and our closed landfill funds. That's the staff portion. The rest of the bulk of the money goes to sites where there is no one there to clean it up. The state has to clean it up. And so this would take from staff overseeing cleanup sites or where no one else is there and the state is the last call for getting something done, it would take money from those projects across the state.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you want to incorporate that language then?
That'd be fine, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to ask that. And how would that read again exactly? Is that on line 1.5?
Mr. Chair, on line page 1, line 3, it would, after the word year, insert from the general account in the remediation fund.
Okay. So Senator Ingebrigtsen incorporates that language into his amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 812AG.ENV.NR amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Schmidt, are we ready to go back to Senator Schmidt's? Do we have some language? Can we go back to your first one?
Mr. Chair, whatever you'd like to do.
Okay, let's go back to that one as long as...
Well, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Schmidt, I think what we discussed was to allow this nonprofit organization to be able to apply, but to get it into the language underneath this business development competitive grant program. So the language I'm suggesting would be on page 3 after line 33, and this would be within the paragraph for the competitive grant program, to insert a Minnesota-based nonprofit with demonstrated expertise in water technology research and development is eligible to apply for a business development grant under this paragraph in order to establish a water technology cluster development pilot program.
This takes a little while.
And what happened? What's do we delete the 250 or what do we do here?
Mr. Chair, I'm just I would disregard this whole amendment, and I just took some language from here. So the language I just said
would be the entire amendment. So you'd have a delete all amendment. That would right.
It would just be an oral.
This is
oral just
amendment.
An oral amendment to the article. Okay,
Mr. Chair, I'd accept that amendment.
Okay. Does everybody understand that then? Okay, so all in favor of the oral amendment Senator Schmidt's oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. The motion is adopted. Okay. I think who's next? All right. Senator Schmidt, go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you. I have the A8 CDF amendment.
So just so you guys know why I'm reading these numbers like this, Senator Westrum has to track them on his computer, and so they aren't always the same if I don't read them right. Okay, and so we want to make sure.
There are
two A8
amendments.
Plus, there's two A8 amendments? There's different amendments. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what is this one now?
All right. Mr. Chair, this deals with the Olmstead Plan training grants portion of our bill, and what it does is it carves out $250,000 for expansion of a pilot program to go statewide. We have a really unique environment in Winona. The last couple of years, we've had a local firm working with Winona Health and others to advance telemedicine and essentially bringing technology, monitoring technology and related technology to individuals' homes to allow them to receive services and be productive members of society in their homes. And what this amendment would do would allow that approach to be taken, not necessarily statewide, but to expand the pilot to additional communities. I know that they've been working with Landon Foundation and others to identify communities. I think up to 10 Minnesota communities are ready for this sort of investment and this sort of technology. And important to note that this would address some of the concerns with the Olmstead Plan and would allow Minnesota to take a step forward in that direction. That's why we're proposing a carve-out of some of these funds from this section of your bill. I could read a statement that's been provided to us from a local stakeholder, if you'd like me to. Otherwise, hopefully that's a good background on what we're proposing here.
Have you had a discussion with Senator Hoffman?
I did have a chance to chat with Senator Hoffman, and I would welcome your, any questions that folks might have.
And what did he say?
Well, I think we're all interested in looking at unique approaches to addressing the challenge with the Olmstead Plan. This one builds upon some of the conversations we've had the last couple of years with broadband and technology in individual homes. And I think that the track record that we see in Winona is exemplary. And I know that there are a number of communities around Minnesota that would be very interested in being able to see that technology implemented in their communities.
So he didn't say yes or no.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't asking for that, I guess. I just gave a heads up.
All right. Well, pending Senator Hoffman's approval, I'm okay with this if everybody else is on here. It seems to me it's not doing anything to the budget. It's using an amount that's already in. And so it's dedicating $250,000 of the money that's already accounted for of the $750,000 that's already in the bill. So. If I hear from Senator Hoffman between now and either the end of the committee or in the Finance Committee that he doesn't want to do this, then we may have to change it. So on the A008 CDF amendment, is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Any further amendments? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'll first offer an oral amendment.
To what?
To the both on page 50. This is a livestock industry study. It's on page 50 of the first chunk of the bill. So the AG.ENV.NR.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, a good process, good government person. Only. It's my only reason I'm offering this amendment.
Okay. Tell me what it is.
It's to delete the words, including but not limited to the impact of lawsuits filed for nuisance actions against poultry or livestock farms.
Which line?
Lines 50.7 to 50.8. Let's do
that one. Yeah. We got it. Like, good thinking. I forgot about that.
I was scouring the chair's amendment for this and didn't see it. So.
That was the Weber amendment that we had a roll call vote on, that if we keep it in here, the whole bill goes to judiciary. So we think it's better to take it out. So, Senator Weber, you know what we're talking about here?
I do.
Okay. And you're good with that, right?
Well, not really, but...
Mr. Chair, it pains me.
Okay. So we're deleting everything after... after years on line 50.7, and then we're deleting all of line 50.8.
Correct.
Except the period. Except the period. Okay. Senator Scoy.
Having been a recent participant in the Judiciary Committee, I'm going to wish you good luck as you head that way.
Well, that's why we're taking this out.
Well, we're all going to vote on this, aren't we,
yes,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, we are, but we better get this right. Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think you should be afraid of lawyers.
Mr. Chair, are we afraid of Senator Latz for some reason?
For the record, I've only been in front of Judiciary twice, and I don't intend to go back there again.
Mr. Chair, what I am wondering, though, is what is it that we found out from them that they specifically need to look at this? Because this is just a study. We discussed this when we had this amendment passed in committee.
Well, let's do this.
What have we found out from them that makes this somehow relevant in front of their
committee? I don't know, but
committee.
Sometimes you can't just say no to other chairs. So if you want to put it back in on the floor, we can certainly try it. Or put it back in finance, we can certainly try it. But I think for today, we should take it out so we make sure we get out of finance into the floor with either in or out, but not from here to judiciary. So all I know is they asked for it. So.
Mr. Chair, does Senator Weber, are you aware of what it is, or Senator Dibble?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Senator Westrom.
What the reason is that this language specifically hooks the Judiciary Committee to having jurisdiction and needing to review this, and is that consistent with everything else that they choose to review? That's what I'm trying to figure out, because it isn't adding new law, it isn't making new law, it's just having this as a scope of the...
I don't necessarily disagree with you, Senator Westrom, but I don't want to go in front of Judiciary. So, Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair,
don't even think
I had a one-paragraph bill, and I think I spent about 40 minutes there.
Yes, and they changed the comma.
Bill of this size, shoot, you could probably...
Yeah, it'd be a week and a half. It'd be a week and a half. On the devil motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I do have another amendment, but I need to find out from Ms. Doyle Fontaine.
Are you ready?
Making a slight little, we're doing a Schmidt on this.
What is the number on this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, do you want us to pass out the amendment, though?
Sure.
Okay. This is the A0010 CDF amendment.
I just lost it. Right.
And Mr. Chair, I'll start explaining it. This is from the accelerator bill. I don't remember the number of it that Senator Dibble carried, and we heard a couple days ago. And this would put the language in and appropriate some money from the general fund. But the idea here is somewhat similar to what we did for Senator Schmidt for the other business competitive grant program. But this would be coming from the card grants. And I don't know if everyone has it now. I was going to say I can go ahead and read the language.
Sure.
I have?
Yeah.
So the language would read, a Minnesota-based nonprofit with demonstrated expertise and capability in energy efficiency, energy technology research, and conservation improvement program delivery is eligible to apply for an applied research and development grant under Section 216B.241, Subdivision 1E, in order to establish and operate an energy technology business accelerator.
And that's the whole thing?
That could be it. There's a sentence after it requiring a match, but I didn't discuss that with Senator Dibble, so I could include that or not include that. Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, I'm fine with including all the rest of the language as well, because, you know, it kind of sets forth how Mr. Chair, this is the business energy efficiency technology accelerator bill that I presented in conjunction with Center for Energy and Environment a few days ago,
so
would just make it eligible for some existing grant program that resides in the Department of Commerce. My real goal is just to simply...
When you say include all the rest of the language, what is all the rest of the language you would like to include?
That's on the amendment. On the
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, but the rest of it goes on to just explain the kind of activities they would be conducting right. at this energy technology business accelerator. And so we could include that, but obviously we're right now just saying that they could apply. So I don't know if...
So what I think you're suggesting is that the people who are considering the grant application would determine how it's going to be used, or they would, when they...
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just suggesting that it's a lot of detail for something that's just going to apply for the grant for the technology.
Sure.
But we can certainly change that. But I could also add the sentence, any grant amount received must be matched with cash or in-kind contributions or might require a match.
Sure.
Or
sure.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, that makes sense. Why don't we just then cut it off at line 12?
All right, so it won't be $400,000 each year or anything like that. And here it'll be what Ms. Doyle Fontaine just read, and then plus the match. So it would be the A0010CDF amendment that, as corrected by counsel, Senator Scoy.
So this is just making this group eligible for
to apply.
The grant. They can apply and the department
can be part of the competitive grant. Okay. Does everybody understand that? Okay. Then on the Dibble amendment as corrected by council, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion is adopted. Okay. Any other? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the A15 amendment. Council can add any numbers that we need.
Mr. Chair and members of Senator Westrum, that the document number, it's a reviser document. It's the A15-0491.
Hey, Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, members and Mr. Chair, what this does is changes a couple definitions on the broadband program that we've established in our state. Two main things we've referred to the FC or specific speed. Senator Schmidt and his work in the last year or two with a four down, one up, if I recall correctly. The FCC changes that speed or internet high speed rating from time to time, and it's now a 25.3. So this would just mimic and refer to their rating versus putting a number that's static in our statute. Secondly, for those that are looking to improve hard-to-serve areas, it would add the word economic development along with unserved or economic development as reasons to qualify for the broadband grants. And Dan Dorman is here working with the coalition on this. If you have any questions, he could answer them or give us more background if members have questions, Mr. Chair.
Let me make a suggestion.
I'm not sure
I like this. So how about if we put or in need of broadband to promote significant economic development and delete service to retain or create jobs? Because I think that expands it by a long shot.
Which part, Mr. Chair?
I think service to retain or create jobs should be deleted and just leave in or need of broadband to promote significant economic development.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could just maybe ask for comment from Mr. Dorman and
Here?
I'm certainly open to maybe your suggestion.
Go ahead, Mr. Dorman. You're okay with my suggestion, right?
Mr. Chair, I'm sure I am.
Okay.
All right. I didn't hear it, but I'm sure it's well-reasoned, very insightful. But what was it?
Well, my suggestion is that or in need of broadband to promote significant economic development, economic growth is more than enough. The other part, the service retainer create jobs, gives me pause to think that it could end up in a city like Duluth or Rochester or something like that, and that's not what this is intended for, I don't think.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with you.
Okay, so...
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that so, in as an oral amendment.
So, Senator...
Friendly amendment.
Senator Westrom will incorporate the deletion of... we're in need of broadband and delete to retain or create jobs. Senator Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, I just quickly comment. I wasn't planning on changing the policy of our fund this year. I think it's worked pretty well, but I would say that this does improve the fund, and I think that both what we're talking about with the FCC definition of broadband and also expanding the focus simply from those unserved areas to those that promote economic growth, I think this will make for a better fund. So I wasn't expecting this, but Senator Westrom, I think this is a good idea.
Okay, so the words that I suggested we delete were on line 1.33, and the words that I suggest we delete are to retain or create jobs.
Mr. Chair, would you mind repeating that?
So it would read this way. The new language would say, or in need of broadband service to promote significant economic growth. Okay? All right? Any other further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A5AGENBNR amendment. You get that for me?
Did you get that?
Mr. Chair. If I could, Mr. Chair, if I could call up Mr. Dan Larson with regards to the off-road vehicle account. I'm sorry, does everybody have this? Maybe.
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson with the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association. This is an initiative. Our organization is looking to, the amendment does, I haven't seen the amendment, but what I...
Whoa. What do you mean you haven't seen the amendment? Get him on amendment.
I drafted the amendment.
Okay, on the amendment.
Okay. Within the Natural Resources Fund, the off-road account, we are shifting the equivalent $225,000 to grant and aid, and an additional, and then directing a new position, the amount of $75,000 to contract or work on trail projects in greater Minnesota. So the idea is to shift dollars to grant and aid projects, to get our members into the field, to work with DNR professionals that are in the field, and to provide the funding that they're going to need to build what we hope and consider to be a state-of-the-art four-wheel drive trail system in greater Minnesota. We do have plans that we think these dollars will be needed for these dollars. So that's the proposal. Shift 225, right, currently the base is $100,000 for grant and aid in the off-road account. We're gonna add $225,000 to it and create a position for $75,000.
Okay, so any comments from anybody who's interested in this? DNR, do you want to comment on this? Or no?
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We have been working with the Four Wheel Drive Association on this language with the understanding that we will revisit these funding levels next biennium and make sure that they're sustainable. Our concern is that if the increased grant aid activities drive us to do more work, we may need an additional appropriation out of the account next biennium, but for now we're okay with this language.
Okay, so then we would we probably should put in this as a one-time appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, that would be fine with us.
Okay, let's do that then. So we'll incorporate that into the amendment then?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Seeing none on the A5.ENV.NR amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Are there any further amendments? Senator Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, I just perhaps an oral amendment. I have a question, though, first. I'm looking at page 3 of the economic development sheet of our spreadsheet before us. And this deals with the appropriation for employment services for the deaf and blind. This is, I think, Senate File 486 that we brought to the committee. And we had asked for, I believe, $1.2 million a year for this, and we were given $600,000 in each of the next 2 years. And I also see above that in line 159 an appropriation beyond what the governor is asking for extended employment for persons with disabilities, $1 million over what the governor is asking for instance. I'm just wondering if you would be willing to perhaps entertain an amendment to bring that allocation to the employment services for deaf and blind on line 160 up to a full $1 million in each of the next 2 years. Just shifting out of that extended employment for persons with disabilities line on 159. If there's more to the story, I'd certainly love to hear it. I'm just
let's hold off on that until you can tell me more about it, and we just don't.
We have some folks who could speak to it if you'd like.
Willy nilly, just do something in here because somebody feels like they need some more money. I'd rather not do it right now and have a little bit discussion with some people offline.
Okay.
And potentially do it at a later date. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A0015 CDF amendment.
This you got is it here?
Yep. I believe Ms. Doyle Fontaine's got it. And with her assistance, Mr. Chair, I'll have her explain it if I can, and also like to call forward, if I could, real quickly, Aaron Campbell and Mark Stoltman.
Mr. Chair and members, I can quickly go over the amendment. This language comes from Senator Anderson's bill we heard the other day, Senate File 1965. And what the amendment would do is it would appropriate $1 million from the second year of the MIF funding for a grant to the solid waste management company in Delano for site development and planning for the innovative municipal solid waste facility demonstration project.
Oh, hi. Go ahead. Say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, Erin Campbell from Messily and Kramer, representing Randy Sanitation and Organic Solutions. As Ms. Doyle Fontaine mentioned, this is the bill that the committee heard on Tuesday afternoon. This is a pared-back version of the bill. The bill requested $2.85 million, mm-hmm. and this is a $1 million request to take care of site development and planning and to get the ball rolling on this project. Mr. Stoltman is here from the company, and he can tell you a little bit more about the project if you like. But,
Remind us a little bit about it.
Sure. The project is an anaerobic digester facility in Delano, Minnesota. It's going to be permitted to process 125,000 tons of municipal solid waste. The output will reduce landfill, what will be sent to the landfill by over 70%. There will be a compost material, compressed natural gas material, that is the result of the process, and will be a small job creator in the city of Delano. Perhaps Mr. Stoltman would like to tell you a little bit more.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In addition to what...
Say your name for the record.
My name is Mark Stoltman with Randy's Environmental Services. In addition to what Ms. Campbell said, the municipal solid waste that would run through the facility would run through a proprietary piece of equipment called Burcell, which would... take the lignins and the paper products and open them up so that the gas production is increased. In addition, the process runs under a deep vacuum where it will clean the recyclable materials that are currently in curbside trash so that we're able to move them into the single stream recycling facility that we have and actually recycle material that would currently go into the landfill or through the incineration process. So you get a benefit here, full circle, with not only the recyclables coming out of the municipal solid waste, but the renewable natural gas that's created from the methane gas that's emitted from the digestate. And eventually, through the process, we would screen the material, and it would cure and become a Class 1 or Class 2 compost for land applications, including ag applications and roadway remediation projects.
And where would the other money come from?
The remainder of the majority of the remainder of the project will be financed by Randy's. The business will be financing the remainder. We may come back to seek additional funds next year, depending on how things shake out. But it's mostly privately funded.
What did that mean?
Well, the request was for $2.85 million, and we'd be amendment.
But my point is, if we give you a million, are you going to get somewhere, or are you going to be sitting around with $1 million in your pocket and not doing anything?
We've, Mr. Chair, we've spent in excess of $1 million of our own money already, and we are going to get somewhere. We're in process of...
That doesn't give me any comfort that you're going to have a project when you get done. Do you have money to finish the project, because there's a chance you might not get any more money from us?
Mr. Chair, we do have the money and the funding to finish a project if we're unable to secure any more funds.
So you don't need this money, then?
We'd love to have the money. We need the money. You know, early adoption of a process like this is always more expensive in any way, shape, or form you look at it. And I think that the state's gain on this would be a transparent view of how the process works. This is an emerging technology that's going to benefit everybody.
Let me suggest everybody. This. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, why don't we require a match from the company in order to get this money that's up and above what they've already put into the project?
I got the heads bobbing, Mr. Chair. But I, Mr. Chair, if I could, I was here during that presentation, and I'll have to say that when it comes to recycling and getting rid of our waste, this is one of the best things I've seen in a long time. We're getting rid of even some construction material, which we've been landfilling in the past now. So this is, as they say, cutting edge technology moving forward, creating energy. I think this type of a thing is a thing of the future. But, yes, if you want to put that in there, that's just
okay,
fine.
Ms. Fontaine, where would you put that?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I would just, on line 1.18 after the period, insert this appropriation requires a match. And I don't know if you wanted non-state sources.
I wanted a match. Yes, non-state match, and I want it to be not what they've already put into the project. I want it to be
new money
above what they've already put into the project.
Mr. Chair, the project cost is actually in excess of $30 million, and so it'll be matched and then some.
I'm comfortable, just as long as you don't try and use the million you've already put in to match this million. Okay? All right? You got that language
yes.
now? Okay. Okay, can you read the language?
Right now, I just have, Mr. Chair, this appropriation requires a match from non-state sources. I need to figure out how to put in new funds of money that has not already
been expended
on the project. Correct. Thank you, Senator Westbrook.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have an idea.
Go ahead.
If they've already spent $1 million and they're going to put another million in, require $2 million match, and then you're good to go.
Mr. Chair,
that would actually work.
I think it's heard later on.
It's not already been expended. It's the same.
They can count the million they put in and a million new. And
Mr. Chair, I don't totally understand what Senator Scoy is talking about. They already put a million in. You want them to match another million. So
before we give them this million, I want to make sure that they got $1 million of their own money before we give them a check. So, Ms. Fontaine, Doyle Fontaine, I don't get your name wrong.
Mr. Chair, you can just call me Ms. Fontaine.
Okay,
that's
good. All right.
I would read, this appropriation requires a match from non-state sources from funds that have not already been expended on the project.
Nor in-kind contributions.
Nor in-kind contributions, period.
Okay. How's that? Does that work?
Mm-hmm. Very well.
Okay. All right. So Senator Ingebrigtsen will incorporate that language in the amendment. Senator Westrom?
Well, Mr. Chair, question two things. First, I assume we could use that language on the other appropriations in this bill as well. We'd want similar type matches if this is the standard we want to set. But I guess a question to the... to the business, what do you expect after this as up and running. You'll be selling the natural gas to heating company, or you'll be selling the natural gas in the pipeline. What are you going to be doing with the stuff you recapture? And is that enough to cash flow and make a profit on when you're done?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, we will not be selling gas back to the grid. It's cheaper to buy natural gas than it is to create it. The natural gas that we will create will go back full circle into our trucks, our compressed natural gas trucks. Xcel Energy has a program where renewable energy is part of their portfolio needs, and they are on board to allow us to put the compressed natural gas, renewable natural gas we create, behind the meter into our equipment, and we'll burn that in our trucks.
So
that's part of the cash flow of the project itself is a savings that we would get from not purchasing natural gas.
So, Mr. Chair, is this business model sustainable without future subsidies or credits? I mean, is that – I understand you're early adopter, or are you still dealing with technology that you're testing, or is there a – is there an efficiency that you'll be able to meet that there will be profit made at the end, given that you might have some subsidized upfront costs for operation or for capital equipment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, this is a fully sustainable model. We've been working for 11 plus years in the organics industry, and for a company our size, this project has to be sustainable long term. There is a combination of savings that make it feasible. First of all, the facility itself, the feedstock, generally speaking, when you create a facility, let's assume a county creates it, you have to have contracts. We have enough feedstock of our own, municipal solid waste of our own, to meet the needs of the capabilities of the facility. So our own material feeds the facility. Any additional material we get is a bonus. The Performa is designed specifically with just our solid waste, and the savings that you have when we change the complexion of material from municipal solid waste, which has to be tipped at a landfill or an incinerator, and change it to a compostable product, even if the compostable product is worth virtually nothing, the savings in the disposal costs as well as the savings in the purchase of the natural gas contributes greatly to the sustainability of the project itself. In addition to that, you have specific credits that come and go, RIN credits, et cetera, that also help the project.
All right. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions on this? Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did we have a hearing on this bill? I'm just my memory is just a little foggy in this.
Yes, we did.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So on the Ingebretson motion as amended, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed motion is adopted. Okay. Any
thank
more
you.
Amendments? Senator Ingebretson.
I do, Mr. Chair. This is an exciting
voting,
one.
You better be voting for this bill.
Yeah. Is that part of the deal here?
You betcha it is.
Mr. Chair, I actually have an amendment here upon contingent upon receipt of matching dollars. So I offer the A0007 CDF amendment. I've already lost one vote, Mr. Chair.
Did you have one?
Did I have one?
You have one?
Move along, Bill. You're losing votes.
I don't have any. This was with regards to the St. Paul Port Authority, if anybody's here to testify.
Oh, we did that already.
Oh, you did. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That it?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. No, I have one more, Mr. Chair. Seriously?
Did Schmidt.
I must have been out. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, this is the last amendment I have, I promise. This is the A11 related to the ag and environment and natural resources.
Go ahead. What is it?
You know, this just deals with...
Is it oral or what is it?
No, it's the A11.
Hang on a minute. Let's get it distributed.
And Mr. Chair, this deals with the rider language for our farm-to-food shelf appropriation. And there was a bill moving that had some minor tweaks to the program, and we just thought we'd bring them to you today. If you have any questions, we can receive testimony on it. But the program itself has been wildly successful, and I thank you for the appropriation in this bill. We would just like to bring the language up to par with what we're looking for.
This is the A11.AG.ENV.NR amendment. Does anybody have any comments on this? Senator Scoy?
Senator Schmidt, could you tell me a little bit about the 4% to reimburse for transportation expenses?
You know, Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, if you don't mind, perhaps we could bring some testimony up just to hear from them directly on what they've experienced in the first year.
We do mind.
I don't care.
So, Senator Scoy is not that curious, though?
Not that curious.
Is that all I have to do? Written testimony?
We've got five other ones, so we can get right to it.
I see a white flag.
On the Schmidt Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That's the not curious. No votes. Senator Ingebretson.
I guarantee this room will
happen. Goes on, right?
Senator, if it goes, it's
Senator Ingebretson, what's the number?
Mr. Chair, did I lose it? Mr. Chair, no. The A10-AGENVNR amendment.
Does somebody have that one? Did we do this one already?
We did. We're out of here.
Scopes on sharks.
Mr. Chair, what are we doing, David?
Oh, man.
Oh. Isn't this a fishing game?
Oh,
bill?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't this a fishing game bill amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would have to say that the folks with glass eyewear on right now will appreciate this, that they're whitetail hunters, Mr. Chair.
Well, I love this amendment. I'm opposing it. So does anybody else have anything to say?
I move it.
Huh? You
Mr. Chair, could I give it a little explanation?
No, yeah, go ahead. Go
thank
ahead.
You. But I know everybody in the crowd is really, really looking forward to this.
I know.
Mr. Chair, the scopes on muzzleloader issue has been around for a long time, and as long as I have been here, for sure. And this year I came up with an idea, actually on my own, as a compromise, and actually have the... Senate Majority Leader as a co-author, so I know that it is a compromise that's probably agreeable to the most. But it's basically allowing anybody over the age of 60, men or women that are still hunting whitetail, to be able to take a whitetail deer with the aid of a scope. And again, this has been around for some time. This is the first time we've done over the 60 age. Last year, as you recall, Mr. Chair, we did a over 60 for crossbows, obviously to keep folks in the deer stand a little bit longer. The ones that can't pull back the bows that are avid lovers of bow hunting. Talking with the DNR, I don't think they have trouble with this. They haven't in the past. What this is going to do, of course, is going to afford the opportunity, if you have a tag in your pocket, to be able to make a clean kill of a whitetail and bring it home to your family and consume it all winter long. So, and actually, quite frankly, I don't say that lightly, because I'm quite an avid hunter myself, and know that with the aid of the scope, of course, you're going to be able to make a cleaner shot on an animal. And I would think it has a lot of support. So that is my amendment.
We'll see if it has a lot of support. So, Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, is this going along the line of the policy provisions?
I would think this is in
your bill.
Yeah, this is very consistent.
I would think this is pretty consistent.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wanted to be consistent with the policies that were in there, and I thought it would be.
Just about every one of you has a policy provision in this thing now. Yeah. So is the, besides the fact.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you'd have left a little more money on the bottom line.
Quite frankly, Mr. Chair, I don't have the numbers on this, but maybe we could take a little more time and ask the DNR just exactly how many more hunters they suspect may actually stay in the woods, so we could be looking
at
pretty
curious.
Mr. Chair, they could do a study.
No, we don't need a study.
And we could find out if there's any nuisance lawsuits involved with it either.
Put a lawsuit in there and we'll go to judiciary.
On the A10 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division.
provision has been requested. All those in favor, raise your hand.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that.
All those opposed.
Sorry.
Ooh, that was,
seven to six.
It did what?
Passed.
There weren't seven yes votes.
It's, oh, she said
you,
seven.
You counted both of his hands. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I
put a vote on this.
Wait. Senator Gibbons now here.
The motion does not prevail on a 6-6 vote.
You actually counted both my hands?
She did.
That
trick hasn't worked in a long time.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble is here. Maybe he'd like to break the tie.
I don't know which direction he'd go, so we've already acted on it. So, Mr. Knopf, what's the motion here?
Senator Ingersoll, just hold his hand there.
Chair, if you're finished with the markup of the bill, the motion would be to pass the contents of the spreadsheet and the bill draft as amended, and to have staff prepare it as a bill for introduction, and then allow staff to create riders or do anything to effectuate the spreadsheets. Like I noticed there's a conflict between the spreadsheet and the ag portion. You had a small fee that raised $3,000 a year in the bill draft, but the spreadsheet says that we're not doing that. The spreadsheet will drive what goes in. We'll make sure that everything in the spreadsheet is in, unless we make a mistake.
And you need to have broad authority.
We need broad authority
to make this thing all work. So Senator Herr makes that motion. On her motion, all those in any further discussion?
No.
Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you, everybody, and good work. And playoffs, so meeting adjourned.
Playoffs?
That was your priority.